Show.
Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! It's Friday, pulled through the end of a week. Awfully glad to have you along to close the week out, the beginning of my weekend, such as it is. 3 hours to close out the week with great conversation. I hope you will make yourself part of it and join in. It's all very free form. It's very much casual and downright neighborly. It is Front Porch Friday. Come on up on the porch. Occupy one of the rocking chairs. Get a swig from the jug in the corner if you want. Because Fridays are for relaxing. And that's what I'm hoping we're going to do. I guess a word of explanation is in order for my absence last night. And trust me, it was not frivolous. It was not, it wasn't me playing hooky. Erring on the side of caution, I took Agnes to the hospital yesterday. Her doctor thought that she should get it. And what he was afraid of wasn't the case, we hope, still. Looks like Agnes is giving birth to a bouncing baby ulcer. Them suckers hurt. We went over to the local ER, and they ran a CT scan on her. And it was read by some dude in, some dude in India. Getting paid, $3.35 an hour, some radiologist over there who, and, that's all well and good. It's just that I'm a little leery now because it took them three tries to realize something as obvious as the fact that my innards are backwards. Same place, same outfit, same contract. We're crossing our fingers and hoping they got it right on Agnes. But that's where we were. But she appears to be okay. She doesn't feel real good. She hurts. And they say that that's the case with ulcers. Ulcers hurt. So my apologies for missing last night, but that was the reason for it. And every time we have one of these little adventures with the American for-profit medical system, I come back sort of scratching my head. And I don't know how anybody who has any power within government could spend more than a couple of hours in an emergency room, be it rural or urban, and walk away thinking that the system's okay, that this all works, this is just fine. You'd like for the pumpkin-faced John Boner to just sit for a weekend out in the waiting area of a little rural emergency room and see what comes through. And look at it, John, is that okay? Is this okay the way this is good? Best healthcare system in the world. No, John, it's really not. I mean, we're down to the point where because this is all done on a for-profit basis, we farm radiology out to India. Just like we farm out tech support for a router or activating an operating system key with Microsoft. It's astonishingly not right. It's really, really wrong. Can you imagine? Just chew on this for a minute. We all know what radiology is, you know, and there it is definitely something that takes extreme training and a good deal of skill to be able to see and read and interpret. But we have such a broken healthcare system that when you take somebody in, the doc says, "Well, you know, this looks like it could be an enlarged spleen," and they take the patient down to the machine that goes ping. Then, instead of those results being read by someone on site who can consult with a physician, it's just, you know, this is kind of the dark side of the internet. It's sent around the world to someone who reads it on the other side of the planet. And I'm not saying that the person reading it on the other side of the planet is not competent. They may be. But they're not where they can do any good. And the reasons for this are several. You know, first of all, and we seldom talk about this, the chokehold that the American Medical Association has on the training of physicians in this country is obscene. Secondly, the means by which we train our physicians, you know, anybody, and I know we have the guys in our audience who, like me, were members of a fraternity in college. And, you know, it used to be, it's largely been wiped out now, but it used to be that you had to put up with a little bit of BS your freshman year when you pledged, you know, ride the goat, whatever, you know, go on the treasure hunt, you know. Stand on the steps and sing to the sorority in your underwear, whatever. And that's called hazing. Anyone who's ever seen the Animal House and the scene with the very young Kevin Bacon saying, "Thank you, sir, may I have another?" Whack! That's hazing. And it's got an aspect of cruelty to it, an aspect of sadism. You will remember that when George W. Bush was a deke, Delta Kappa Epsilon, at Yale in the 60s, he was exposed by the young Gary Trudeau for his participation in a deke ritual in which they took a coat hanger that had been heated to a white-hot state, and then laid it against the naked flesh of a pledge to brand the Greek letter Delta on them. And the young George Bush back in the late 60s replied,
it's no worse than getting burned with a cigarette.
Well, damn, getting burned with a cigarette, I mean, you know, I'm an addict. And sometimes I'll go to flick an ash here during the show, and a little bit of fly kind of hit my leg or something, or go through, and ow! Real big ow. That's hazing. And what is done to American physicians in training is nothing less. Interns and residents, once they've gotten out of medical school, you know, they get out of medical school with monumental debt and then go into their internships and their residencies. And during those internships and residencies, they may sleep for 2 or 3 hours at a stint and then be expected to treat patients in a teaching hospital. I can't make coffee on 3 hours sleep without screwing it up. But the American Medical Association wants to make sure and haze all the young doctors real, real good so they understand who's by God boss. And so that they will then perpetuate the same process when they get out into the real doctoring world. Well, I put up with it. You can too, son. But it serves no meaningful purpose. It is actually deleterious. It's harmful to sick people. If the medical community were to take that whole the Hippocratic Oath thing that starts first do no harm seriously, then medical training hazing would have to end. Obviously, if it is necessary to farm out the reading of radiology reports to somewhere in God knows where, then we have a radiologist shortage in this country. No, Bob, no, we don't. What we have in this country is a shortage of low-paid radiologists. I mean, think about it. Let's say you go in and they do a CT scan of your abdomen. And they miss something, like the fact that your appendix is on your left instead of on your right. And they die, and later on, your appendix ruptures on the left, and they're still looking at it. And I don't hear about the appendix. And it's the radiologist who caused the problem, but he's in Bangalore. How, within the constitutional framework of the First Amendment's guarantee of freedom to petition for redress of grievances, and within the Bill of Rights' other guarantee of a right to a jury trial and trial by one's peers, how does one get service of process? How does one begin to get judgment against a radiologist working on the cheap somewhere in India? This is not a criticism of Indian people. This is not a criticism of Indian doctors. For all I know, India trains its physicians much more humanely than what we do ours. Maybe they don't haze their young doctors. I don't know. So, but the question remains, how do you deal with that? And it causes me real concern. And every time we have one of these little moments where I have to go and deal with this system, then I come back once again more convinced than ever before that our medical system is broken on levels that many of us don't even comprehend. It is not something as simple as saying, well, you know, everybody needs to be insured. I mean, that is certainly a truism. Everyone does need we need national single-payer health care. We need to take the profit motive out of health care. The people providing health care need to be well paid. And we, as the American people, if we are who we say we are, greatest country on earth, had damned well better be willing to put our money where our mouths are and give the same quality of health care to a young mother in out in the country somewhere, the same quality of health care that we give to a Wall Street bankster. Otherwise, we are not that nation that we think we are. So, I mean, that's, we got to, and we've, I mean, we've, obviously we need more doctors. Obviously the medical schools in this country are not turning out doctors at the same rate that they should. And really there is, within the admissions process of the medical schools, there's a bunch of foolishness and skullduggery. I'm firmly convinced that the admissions process at medical schools is designed not to make sure that only the most competent people are admitted to the training, but rather to make sure that only a limited number of people are admitted to the training so as to maintain market dominance within the American Medical Association. And there are programs. West Virginia has a very forward-looking program for shepherding young students into the medical schools and into the medical professions. But we don't do that. And it has nothing to do with quality of services. It has to do with the deliberate limitation of services, which, again, has to do with going back to nothing but profit. Pure and simple profit. Holy profit. And the American people are the sacrificial lambs on the altar. We need more doctors. We need more nurses. We need more nursing assistants. You know, when I was a kid, when I got sick, I went to the doctor. Eventually, they shepherded me into the little examining room. And the nurse came in, did some history stuff. And then a little bit later, the doctor came in. Well, we've created a system now where you don't see the doctor. You're treated by a nurse and a physician's assistant. And that is not to in any wise criticize the people in that profession, because I know a lot of physician's assistants who could have MD behind their names but for the stranglehold that the AMA maintains on the profession. But having physician's assistants instead of physicians is a means by which one, once again, and this is conservatism at work again in another arena of life or death America, it's a means of keeping salaries down and keeping people out of the doctrine fraternity. To me, it's unacceptable. And it is something that should be dealt with within some portion of the health care debate. Here, however, is the rub. We ain't, and we ain't gonna. Because right now we are blinded, if you will, by the stunning horrors that befall people just as a result of their insurance status, let alone the status of their treatment. In many states, thanks to very well-funded efforts by insurance companies, it has become practically impossible to sue a doctor who screws you up. And so we loop back around to the radiologist in India don't sue me. That radiologist, who, if he was working in the United States, would probably be clearing a couple of $100,000 a year, at least. But who, because he is working in India, is making, you know, $25,000 a year and damn glad to have it. Oh, move to Australia. Thanks, Phase 5. No, we kind of have to sit here in our little house in the hills and fight this one for ourselves. Because it's a fight that somebody's got to do it. And we will. You know, there's another fight we've got coming with the local utility. And we'll talk a little bit more about that later in the program. I've mentioned it before. These merciless bastards want a 50% rate increase over 2 years. I don't see anybody getting a 50% salary increase, you know, among the ratepayers. But you know, we'll do that too. But right now we got folks on the line. Got a few lines open yet. If you want to chime in, you are more than welcome to. I encourage you to. It is, after all, Friday. 877-443-2366 is the number, 877, the numeral 4, head on, or on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Chime right in. By the way, the reason your calls aren't getting screened this evening, Horn intern junior grade Ferg is off at the middle school spring dance. He's dancing and romancing, him being a seventh grade Romeo. So that's why you just go on hold this evening instead of having your calls physically answered. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
Hey, Brother Luke.
Well, that's all right. You just wait till after the show's over and wait for the call from the police. They got to come down here and get the boy.
You know. Oh, I know. I know. I actually have those nightmares.
I know. Get the old Robin Williams thing. He says, where he's talking about his first board. He said, I always have this image of him. And here he's just getting handed the Nobel Prize. He said, I have this other dream. Do you want prize for that? You know. But you know how it is. That's the way of the world. You never know where you might wind up. As you said, with medical people, like right now, every medical school in this country ought to be taking in a half of that 50% more people than they are. Because, like I say, you know, if you listen to anybody, and like I say, the baby boomers are about to hit the fun part, where, when they start retiring, and they're going to be doing a whole lot more medical visits, that number is going to go up, where they're going to need more people, more nurses, more doctors, more technicians. And like I say, they aren't getting ready for it.
Yeah, they are.
Our thing tonight that I was really on was, I haven't looked at what they've been putting out, but how long do you figure it is? I'm sure they've probably already done it. Where I'm sure the centerpiece of the new repackaging of the GOPs is more tax cuts. You know, it's like, guys, you're going to repackage. You got to drop all the things you've been pushing because they ain't working.
Yeah, we're going to have clean energy with tax cuts. We're going to have the cleaner air with tax. Yeah, it won't take long.
You know, it's like most people never bother to go back and look at, you know, remember when Dem Leader said, oh, we have these voluntary, you know.
Voluntary compliance among industry leaders.
In Texas, I think they set out of like about, 500-600 of them. They had four that actually did the voluntary thing. It's like, oh, joy.
Yeah. Yeah. But there were four really responsible companies.
Well, most of them were just doing it just because they got tax abeyances and all that good stuff to go with it.
Right.
Okay. I was watching the Idiot Box last night just for the fun of it and turned on over to Hardball, and my golly, Chris Matthews turned over the rock and Tom DeLay crawled out.
No!
I saw that and I just changed channel. I went, oh!
Why is that man being invited on otherwise polite television show? Well, okay, not polite, but reasonable. No, not reasonable. Why is that man being invited on television?
I mean,
what's he got to say? What impact does he have in the world? I mean, doesn't he have an indictment to deal with or something?
So, like I said, only thing I can see him on there, you have him on there for is, folks, here is your example of what not to be. That's the only purpose that I see to have him on the show. You know, as an example of don't do it. But I saw Matthews talking to him, and I just, like I say, I turned the channel, went over, stand in the corner, and just sort of, for a minute, you know.
Yeah, let that full body shudder just sort of wash over you.
Thought, well, let's go in the bathroom, turn on the hot shower, and get in, you know.
Yeah, where's that loofah, or falafel, or whatever?
Well, let's not even go there.
Yeah.
I got to watch Oberman. Oberman's almost in overdrive on Billow. Oh, God. Apparently Billow now is doing a webcast or something, and he was sitting there describing where their offices were. And Oberman was showing how he got it wrong. You know?
Didn't even know where his own office was.
No. Well, he's describing it and where it is, and it's like, no, Bill, you're on the wrong side.
Is that the functional equivalent of can't find one, of not being able to find one's ass with both hands?
That's pretty much him, yeah. I was wondering, I sent you all that stuff the other day from, I went through, looked through all the main papers I could find. And I'm just curious as to what point do you figure it's going to be where they're going to make Olympia Snow and Susan Collins come down and kiss Limbaugh's ring. Yeah, ring, yeah. I want to say something else, but I'll stop and keep it.
His rosy ring?
Yeah.
I almost wonder if Snow and Collins would be at the point where they would they'd pull a specter before they'd do that.
Well, you know, I think I sent it to you in one of the messages. Either one, you need to send Biden up to get, you know, do talk like he did to Spector, Or I would get hold, you know, somebody in the party, you know, call Jim Jeffords and maybe Bernie Sanders and have them go up and talk to him and say, join us as independents.
And, you know what I, well, Jeffords is gone.
I know.
But, you know, there was Arlen Specter, his first vote as a new, brand spanking new Democrat. You caught what that, but yeah, voting against the budget.
I know. Well, like I say, now comes the whole fun part with the fun part now with all the speculation for a Supreme Court nominee. You know, how's that going to work out? I looking at it, and I said, I have three requirements, actually four, I guess it is, three and a hopeful. I said, A, I want somebody hopefully not much more than 50 years old.
Right.
Two, I want somebody in really good health. I want somebody that's a fitness nut. The first thing, more than the other two of that, is I want somebody who's very liberal.
Mm-hmm.
And fourth,
female.
I'm wondering on the fourth thing, because like I say, I keep hearing him saying he needs to pick a woman or a Hispanic or both. And I'm like, okay, if you can find one, fine. But that shouldn't be a deal breaker.
Right. I personally would prefer, I'd like to have another Thurgood Marshall, if nobody minds.
You know, there's some people out there, you know what I mean. It's like, the only problem is most of the people, unfortunately, are getting up into their 50s and 60s, and I want somebody probably in their mid-40s that can look over at Fat Tony and go, I'll outlive you.
And see, this is a little bit frustrating, this Supreme Court news that came out today, Luke, because, you know, yeah, it's his first appointment, but it's kind of like something that I mentioned a while back. More than likely, all of Obama's appointments will be of people from our own side, so that he winds up involved in a zero-sum game.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, I mean, it's one of those things, you know, I mean, I don't want them to mainly in a way, but it's one of those things where you just hope somebody their friend, you know, will eventually talk to Judge Ginsburg and talk to, mine's going blank on me, senior moment. Oldest justice, I can't think of
it. Stevens, yeah.
Stevens. And tell him, you know, it's like the O'Connor thing. If you want to go, now is the time to go. You know what I mean? We can't guarantee in 4 years he'll still be around for another four. We hope, and we're planning for it, but we can't guarantee it. And, you know, it's one of those things, and depending on how things go in 2010.
Well, the other thing you have to take into consideration as well, Luke, is the fact that even as things are now, If Barack Obama appointed God Almighty to the Supreme Court, the Republicans would filibuster him.
Yeah, I mean, that's fine. I'd sit there and I'd make sure everybody reran all the stories that ran, you know, when Alito and Roberts were nominated and people were out on the right, you know, they have the same thing over Media Matters, brought up the thing, you know, with Bill Kristol was essentially saying if the Democrats filibuster, then they should be declared non-Americans.
Yep.
And I'd run the tapes of that every time they have a vote and they start to try the filibuster. I'd make sure that tape is run. But you know, it's one of those things. It's like, you know, even if they do filibuster, that's fine. It's something we probably need to do and dare them. And if they do, fine. We'll, you know, hold that up. Say, here's what they're doing. There's again, here's the party of no. I mean, that I think should be our new battle cry when we talk about the Republicans. They're the party of no.
Oh, and they're resisting that now, by the way.
Well, that's fine. Yeah, I mean, that's that whole thing, you know, where they're talking about the rebranding. I'm sitting there going, that's okay. I've been to the video store, and I've seen them when they put a new box on a movie I've seen 20 times. And I go, ain't going to fall for that. That's where you go back in the back and read the notes on the back, and you figure out, I've seen this. It's the same thing. It's like, you know, like I said at the beginning. I said, you know, when you start off, and amazingly enough, well, you're for tax cuts. Let's see, you're for corporate deregulation. Somehow I think I've heard this song before. Putting a new name to it don't change the song.
No, and I guess it was Roy Blunt from Missouri came out earlier today. I don't mean that way. But he said, he said, just because we're in a situation now where we vote no doesn't mean we're the party of no. Okay. just because you vote no all the time, it means you're the party of, well, maybe? I mean, it's like one of those, no means no.
Yeah. Not unless they figure out a new definition that we haven't heard. You know, it's one of those things. You know, it's like, and like I say, the beauty of it is, who was the person leading this fight for the repackaging with this, was it National Council for a New America? Eric Cantor! Oh, joy!
Yeah, the Britney Spears fan.
Oh, yeah, well, you know, it's one of those things. It's like I say, tonight I think they've got a new Mars on tonight, so that ought to be good. And like I say, Stewart and them, oh, God, did you see the thing he did, the 100 days? Oh.
Oh, I haven't seen that yet. I'm a little backed up on stuff like that, but I just saw the bit he did on Flu Panic.
Oh,
I about had a conniption.
Oh, it was. Oh, you know, it's like I said. You know, they were talking the other day.
British English zombie journalist John Oliver.
But yeah, we were talking about. Well, I think we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. You know, they were talking about expanding the Pulitzer Prizes. I want something that him and Colbert can run for, because they deserve it, some of the stuff they do. Oh, God. You know, some of the bits they run, some things like that, it's like, you know, you're sitting there going, why isn't the news telling us these things? Because most of the stuff they tell us is not, you know, they're running, it's not made up. That's the beauty of it. It's not faked. I mean, they're just sitting there saying, here's what it really is. We're not going to give you the straight, you know, give you the polite name. We're going to say, here's what it is. Congratulations. I mean, that's what Bill Maher is, you know. Bill Maher doesn't sugarcoat it. He'll come right out and just say it, you know. I mean, you know, when the Democrats chicken out and run that yellow streak up their back, he's there pointing the light at them, too, and I'm happy he does that. You know, it's one of those things when the little D Democrats, you know, so the big D decide they're going to sit here and do something that most of us are going, huh? But, you know, it's like this thing here. I think he was talking about it last night, Stuart, was here's the list of the members of the council. John McCain, Jeb Bush, Mitt Romney, Peeyush Jindal, Haley Barbour.
Oh, well, you know, there's a man with some future-driven ideas.
Oh, let's see. Leader signing an announcement about the initiative includes Boehner, Cantor, Mike Pence, Mitch McConnell, John Kyle, and Lamar, the Platt Avenger. You know, it's one of these things. You're just sitting there going, these are the exact same people. It's like, you know, it's like, just because y'all went out, changed your clothes, came back in, we still recognize you. You know?
And, I mean, these, again, crazy gets you promoted in this party now.
Like you said, it's amazing. I mean, I'm beginning to wonder who's going to, if it's going to, Stewart, I don't know if he's done it yet. I'm sure Maher's probably going to do it. I'm sure he's going to have to start, like you said, going to start having the Bachman watch. And then he'll cover the people like Blackman and some of the others that are trying to catch up to her. Had this crazy woman over in North Carolina. This thing with the Stafford thing where she went out there and tried to claim that he was a thief. You know, that was killed out in Wyoming.
Oh, yeah, that it was a robbery. Yeah. Yeah, Virginia Fox.
Part of the robbery. He was the victim of the robbery.
I know.
And then she went the next night and apparently did an apology.
Yeah, Matthew Shepard's mother was sitting in the gallery when she made that remark.
You know, I don't know what the rules of the House are, but if I'd been a member of the House, I think I'd have gone up and just punched her. I'm sorry. You know, that's just one of them ones.
Well, I just wonder if Rotten Tomatoes can get through security.
Oh.
Because you'd sure want to wing one right at that woman's mug.
I was going to say, I have not looked at it. I should have done it today. I'll check this weekend. I just want to see what the North Carolina papers are saying, because it's one of the things that I hope in her hometown, like say, they're lighting a fire under her. Because I mean, like I say, she comes out the next night and has an apology. If I've offended anybody,
right?
But essentially, it's a non-apology apology.
Well, and that's the only thing a Republican knows how to do is a non-apology apology.
I know. You know what I mean? It's one of some of this stuff. You're just sitting there going, you know, y'all are doing the exact same thing you did, you know, last week. We're not, you know, we all haven't developed that, you know, the brainwashing yet. I'm sorry, you know, we look at the television, but I swear, you know, we're not sitting there blinking our eyes, you know, going, look at the spiral. It's like, we do still have memory usage, just a little bit.
You need ShamWow.
oh God, what was the one that Mar did? Now they've got the one, you know, it's the combination of the ShamWow and the Snuggie. Now you got the so that way, in case you drop it, in case you're gripping something while you're eating, it just soaks right in. You know, and you know, some of these other things. I saw the thing where CNN recently just hired Mary Matlin. I'm sitting there going, guys, you know, this is why people like Stewart and Colbert, and I think you're going to have to see shows like Al Gore's Current, and some of these others going to catch on.
But there's a level of tone deafness. I caught an excerpt from Nancy Grace earlier today.
Black Woman Missing Network?
Worse. She had on the father of the children that Susan Smith murdered a few years back. Mm-hmm. And this tone-deaf woman went through this little song and dance routine where she said, well, you know, I really had misgivings about asking you any of these questions because I didn't, and I couldn't believe the word choice when I heard it, Luke. I could not believe it. I don't want to dredge up these memories for you, but dredge like what you have to do. Oh my God! It made me physically ill to watch.
Oh, good. You know, it's like I say, I've got to the point now. That's what I call the headline news channel. You know, when it first came on, I liked it. You know, it did what it's supposed to do. But like I say, as of, you know, ever since they had Beck on there too. Like I say, that's all it is. It's the missing person channel. They should join it with Courtney.
Well, you know, honest to God, why can't 1 hour, one stinking hour, why can't 1 hour be offered to Mike Malloy? He lives in Atlanta.
I know. I agree with you.
It would be an easy commute down to one CNN center. He used to make it all the time. He used to work for him, just like I did.
Well, you know, for a couple of years ago, every time you turn around, he would be the one in the afternoon when they do their live show, like 2 or 3 in the afternoon. They would have Bortz in to do one side, and they'd have Mike in to do the other side. And those were some fun arguments.
Right, but I mean, just turn him loose. He knows the words he can't say on TV, and he won't use them. But
second button, you know, you got to.
But he'll make the right wingers sting.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know, you know, maybe the offer's been made and Mike won't compromise himself because I don't know how you'd work on the same network with Nancy Grace without going, oh, that woman!
There's sometimes you're hurt with, and I apologize, this may sound sexist, and I apologize, but sometimes you're just sitting there going, the bleach has dug all the way through the skull. And it's drowned the brain.
Yeah, that stuff's corrosive. Yeah, I'm being told, I'm being reminded here by our buddy Marty. Out in California, there's no need to throw rotten tomatoes from the gallery of the house at Virginia Fox. Just throw your shoes.
Well, that could get you that 2-3 year sentence in jail.
And well, yeah, but it's not Iraq, so at least they won't. You know, wait a minute, they would beat you. Never mind.
Well, but I tell you what, I'd say I've been right too long. You go ahead and have a good weekend.
You too, and we will talk soon.
All right, we'll try again. Like I say, next week.
All right, have a good one, Luke.
Keep swinging.
Bye now.
Bye.
Our East Tennessee correspondent, Luke, calling from, curiously enough, East Tennessee. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey, how are you?
You know, it's Friday. I'm here.
I know. It is sort of, you know, it's raining out here, and it's just kind of like, yuck, I have to say.
Well, we've actually had some warm weather here, and it's making me a little bit crazy because I'm suffering from tiller envy. I want a tiller so I can get out and get after my garden.
Oh, right. Yeah, no, that sounds really nice, too. Well, as opposed to thinking about, I'm just so ill with the media already with this Supreme Court business. You know, it's like, you remember how it was when Alito and how if any Democrat even made a peep?
Yeah.
The onslaught?
Oh, yeah. Well, like Luke noted a little bit ago, they were un-American.
Well, no, and it's just, so I was just thinking about that and thinking, you know, and I just wonder about Obama's pick anyway. You know, I have to say, none of these people, when a Democrat has had a chance to pick, they're not liberal. I mean, in the mode of Marshall or even Warren. Who
No, there's a guy who's been sitting at Harvard Law School for probably 30 years plus now, who is the smartest legal mind in this country. His name is Lawrence Tribe.
No, yeah, him and the dean of the Irvine School that just opened, Chermansky.
Chermansky, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if you know him, but he's another amazing. He used to be the dean at Duke. I mean, you know, these are smart people, right?
Yeah, but the Democrats that have occupied the White House have conveniently let those people slide.
We are due to get someone straight up liberal, but somehow that probably won't be because you can't have that. And the reason why you can't have that is because those people aren't on the court to represent our interests anymore. You see what I'm saying? Like everything else in our government now, it's just
And I'm afraid we're going to get one of those mealy mouth, the middle of the road, half measures, essentially. Really, when you get right down to it, moderate to center-right types, that the right wing will then say, look, it's a liberal!
Well, with Ginsburg, her comments about, regretting or thinking that Roe shouldn't have been decided on the court level, I was a bit shocked by that comment. Did you hear that?
I did. And
I was taken aback by that. I wasn't assuming that she was, over-the-top liberal, but I have to say that comment wasn't very comforting, you know?
It wasn't, and if a person, the woman, Dawn Johnson, that's been nominated to head OLC,
held up.
Last I checked, she was. And then the right wing was having a fit because and Ben Nelson, supposed Democrat, having a fit because she had worked for NARAL. The National Abortion Rights Action League. Wow, we can't have somebody. No, I think they're too liberal. It kills the babies.
No, it's okay. They have okay. I mean, Sanders put a hold on this one cretin who used to work for Goldman Sachs, who's now in charge of some regulatory agency, which we need not to have bank people in it. And they, what's his face? From Nevada? The leader of the Senate?
No, Reed.
Reed, wouldn't even touch a Republican hold, no matter what. Remember that?
Yeah.
They
yeah.
put a hold, and he would be like, "Oh no, it's untouchable." He ignored Sanders, and they just put this man through. You see what I mean?
Yeah, yeah,
and
I do.
It really pisses me off. It's like these representatives are not. I'm not too sure who they're representing. But, we're just sort of pissing in the wind out here, I've decided.
I'd like to have somebody with some decent environmental creds.
But anything that deviates from protecting the establishment and their kind, just anything different.
With Souter being the one, Souter turned out to be a surprise.
Well, yeah, he was a surprise. Yeah, no, I'm not. Yeah, definitely. But I'm not interested in surprises when we know we could get X, Y, or Z. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't want to have to be sort of being, I can already hear people making excuses for whatever pick Obama comes up with. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. And your initial premise was spot on, Sandra. The for-profit media will drive this debate, and they will speak in terms of, another liberal. And, frankly, God help Barack Obama if he should happen to actually nominate an African American or a Hispanic American, we could have told you this. He's going to load the court with those people.
The court is desperate for somebody other than a white or a Catholic. Sorry, but we got enough of them on there, don't we?
Yeah, by half.
Shit, man. I mean, it's just I don't care. The dude, listen, he's a minority that happens to be president. Damn, Skippy, if he don't appoint some. No one ever says anything when. Forgive me, when Whitey does what he does. Sorry.
No, that's all right. No, look, I'm the last guy on earth wants another old white man on the court.
No, what I'm saying, though, but he should not be forced into not appointing someone of color because he happens to
right.
be.
Right, and that's what's going on already, Sandra.
No, it's just absurd. The absurdity of it is a joke. The man has power. This is what happens in America when you get elected to office. You take care of you and yours. That's what's been going on for the last hundreds of years here. Please give me a break from that. If he don't appoint somebody of color, I'll be pissed off on some levels. It's like, dude, what the hell? You know, I don't have no issues with that. It's like, he's in there now, and that's what happens, right?
And you know what? I'm with Luke on this one too, Sandra. I want a 48-year-old.
Oh yeah, no. You know, because I need for that Scalia. I want that to go. I mean, how old is that?
Scalia's only what, 74 maybe?
Oh God, it's just, you know, I'm sick of him. And the thing about,
I mean,
it's not
unreasonable to think that man's going to sit on the court for another, you know, could easily sit on the court for another 14, 15, 16 years.
No, I know, because I look at Stevens, he's 89, so obviously dude could live to be that long, you know.
Well, you know, they're kept like prized cattle at that point.
No,
I mean,
there was
Rehnquist, you know. Rehnquist was what, up in his 80s.
And he was high as hell.
Yeah, he was a junkie most of the time he was on the court.
And I mean, and don't get me wrong. I mean, I'm not saying that he can appoint. It doesn't have to be someone of color. I'm just making a point that, you know, shouldn't be a shock if that went down. That's all I'm saying.
It shouldn't be a shock. And frankly, I'll go further than you. It really kind of has to be a person of color.
Well, I'm just saying, just as far as regardless of if it was Obama or some, you know, the usual white person, the court is still lacking in representing the people, right? I mean, as far as the makeup goes.
Yeah, and frankly, I've got a little bit of a vested interest in this, Sandra, because during the election campaign, I argued that when everything else was put aside, when we acknowledged that Barack Obama wasn't a liberal by any rational definition, that he was a moderate, but that at the end of the day, you kind of had to go vote for him simply because because of the kind of Supreme Court picks you knew that John McCain would make. Okay, so I feel like I've got a little bit of personal credibility hinging on this
because I
advocated for Obama. Based on a final analysis Supreme Court thing. And if he nominates some pasty-faced, doughy, white old mugwump, I'm going to feel like an ass.
Well, see, you know, unfortunately, I'm measuring everything by this financial response. And because I look at it from that point of view, it's not boding well, because he has decidedly sided on the interest that aren't out for us. You see what I'm saying?
I know that real well, living where I live, Sandra.
And that's a problem for me, because if he's siding with the banksters and the credit card companies and not fighting hard for cram down to go through, you know, for the bankruptcy, all the things that with teeth in it that will really sort of help your average person out here, well, you know, I got to ask, why should I expect any other thing to be all that different? You know, I don't see him coming out daily like he should for EFCA. This is what should be going on, Bob. This man should be out there using his bully pulpit to explain.
Yeah, beating the drum.
To explain why we need to level the playing field for wages in this country if we're going to be a consumer country again, because, frankly, people don't have any money to consume, and the only way they can increase that purchasing power is wages, which requires you know the story, you know.
Sure.
So he needs to be pounding that, and he's not. He seems to be, they all seem to be a bit waffling now on the labor laws, you know, which.
Well,
you know,
he's had enough pushback to sort of remind him that he is running for office right now.
Well, I mean, but there's three major prongs that he can address: the health care, and they're already talking about no you know, single payer, which the majority of people want. That's already a strike against them. The bank thing, you know, the financial industry, they shouldn't be siding with those people. It's just, you know, I don't know. I'm sort of, and I know every time I call, I'm always bitching about Obama, and I don't really mean to. I just am sort of
If you were just griping for griping's sake, I think everybody would recognize it. But I don't think anyone thinks that that's what you're doing. We have a job, and our job is to point at. I mean, we've got to be a counterbalance to this damn dirty, filthy lie that's out there, Sandra. That, you know, Barack Obama is a liberal. You know, the very notion of some. the addle-pated little wingnut out there thinking, ah, he's taking us to socialism. No, he's taking you to center-right moderation, wishy-washy, friend, you know, fascism with a smiley face.
Well, no, but I mean, it's just sort of, you know, I'm not saying that the solution has to be, you know, my idea of, you know, sort of liberal utopia, but you can't not address the health care issue in this country. What we have now has failed, you know, just practically speaking, right? It doesn't work.
No, it doesn't work at all. I get to see how it doesn't work.
Right. Everyone who is it, yeah. That's why a majority of people want to try a public option. And we can't even get them to agree to just try a public option. Let competition work, you know what I mean? Wink, wink. Because we know that shit would fail, like it did when they provided health care for old people. All them private companies, where are they now, Bob?
They ain't.
Exactly. So, you know, I mean, I don't know. I just am sort of like so over it with these people. It's like the solutions are they're begging.
The solution, well, I think it would be a little bit less frustrating, Sandra, if the solutions weren't so damned obvious.
Well, that's the thing. It's just, listen, there's a lot of people who are a lot smarter than me in positions of power. It ain't take that much.
Check this out, just by example, and I won't name names. He's a nice guy. The guy we go to for our health care. He's a very, very conservative guy, and we have these friendly conversations, you know, the ones that you have in the doctor's office when you're naked and the other guy isn't.
But
he said, you know, we can't have socialized medicine. And he said, you know, it's the bureaucracy. He says, I have such a hell of a time getting my people treated, you know, because there's some bean counter who's answering calls and passing yay or nay on whether somebody can have a necessary medical treatment. And I looked at him and said, but dadgummit, that's happening in the, you know, I said, it's not like that doesn't happen when you're dealing with somebody's for-profit insurance. He goes, that's true. I said, then obviously that's not a socialized medicine issue. That is a bad bureaucracy issue. You know, that's another function of us not having enough doctors. You know, that my wife's radiologist is in India. And
well, yeah, no, I mean, the thing about, you know, it's publicly paid for and privately delivered. This is what we're talking about.
Yeah.
You keep your doctors, you keep your hospitals, and it's paid for by pooling resources.
Well, but I mean, yeah, and it needs some really new thinking. For instance, have a rotation because, you know, this stuff really does matter. I can speak about something from a completely different end. You know, I went through 3 years of law school.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I can tell you they taught me a lot in that law school. One of the things they never taught me was how to be a lawyer. They do not teach that in law school, and to a certain extent, they don't teach you how to run a law office. And in medical school, they teach you, you know, academic, scientific doctoring, but they don't teach so much about the realities of the delivery of medical care. You know, why not have an internship rotation through the office that instead of having some guy with an accounting degree, if you get that, deciding whether or not somebody can have a medical procedure, have a young doctor doing that. You know, somebody with an actual medical background as opposed to somebody with a background of human freaking resources.
No, I mean, it's just, the thing is, it's just so blatantly terrible, our healthcare system, and it's just getting worse by the minute, and you still have to listen to Nancy Pelosi talking about, oh, all everyone can talk about is single payer, but it's not happening. It's like, you know what, you dumb bitch? Why is everybody always saying it to you then? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, because
obviously that's what people want. And
yeah, and when you say, well, it's not working, that's because you're making that becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Well, no, but it's, you know, it's just, I don't know. I'm just sort of stupefied. These fools got all three branches now, and there's still some problem. You know what I mean?
Well, and the problem, I think, is something that Malloy identified. And it is the fact that, you know, when he said the other night that the Democratic Party is becoming, you know, that the Republican Party is going the way of the Whigs, and that the Democratic Party is becoming the new center-right party in America. And there aren't enough of us on the end, on, you know, hanging on to the end of the rope and pulling for all we're worth back toward the, you know, the center or left of center. Because the other side is so well organized that they just go buy some rebar and concrete and put the rope in the ground on the right.
Well, I mean, the thing is, it's just, yeah, no, but all these parties seem to, you know, have one constituency, which is, you know, the sort of entrenched business interest. It's so hard.
Yes. I mean, that's exactly it. You and me, we ain't got a prayer against somebody who can write a check for $100,000.
No, especially when we have this first-past-the-post representational system based on a 18th century constitution. I mean, I don't mean to go there, but we could use some real shifting up in here. This we're totally stagnant as far as being able to.
Well, look, I mean, yeah, you're so right in so many ways. Look at the District of Columbia. Can't have statehood because a bunch of terrified white people in the Senate are afraid that D.C., if it had statehood, would send, to the Senate, and that would just wreck the balance of power. And it's the same damn debate we were having with the Missouri Compromise. Well, you know, we can't make them a state. They'll come in as a non-slave state, and then we'll be ruined.
Right. Well, no, you know, we always sit around celebrating, we have this Constitution, which provided a certain level of stability. But the opposite of that is that, hello, it was from 1789, you know, at any rate. So I just think that, I don't know. I'm just, you know, just so done with how intractable all this is, even when there's a single party in, which is what's going on now, right?
Yeah, it is. You're right.
Yeah.
And I recognize your frustration, and you know, all we can do is keep hollering, and you know, empowering each other to go out and holler some more at people who it matters to holler at.
Yeah, well, I'll still keep paying attention and call the various people that I can, but boy, it really does get, I don't know.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
Yeah. Anyway, I'm going to go.
All right. Sandra, have a wonderful weekend. We'll talk soon.
All right. Bye.
Bye. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi there.
Hey, what's up?
Well, first of all, I've got a couple things. But first of all, the person who is deciding whether or not that medical procedure is covered is not some bean counter. It is a biller and coder who is probably making minimum wage, who looks at the code that goes with the procedure and then looks at the insurance goodie and says, is this code covered?
Susan, when it's working right, you're absolutely correct. With a not-for-profit system, it's a little bit more likely you'll get the cover, the treatment that you need. But, you know, remember that there are people out there who are getting more than minimum wage in the for-profit system whose actual performance bonuses are based on how many procedures they turn down.
Oh, yeah, I know that. The difference being is in a not-for-profit, the list of codes that are allowable to go through is longer. In a profit system, it's shorter. That's the only difference.
Yeah, yeah.
And this minimum wage person who is going through these codes madly because you're judged on how many you go through per day, you go through and go whip, 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 and you're entering those things like...
Well, and let's take it one step further. Let's take it one step further, Susan, because there is no guarantee that person on the other end who's entering the codes is even within the territorial confines of the United States anymore.
Yes, that's true.
I mean, I've got another story. It's not that story, but I got a story that's something similar that hopefully I'll get to tonight.
You're outsourcing billing and coding, too.
Yeah.
God, I love it. And these are minimum wage jobs. The reason I called in, snarl. I put up a goodie up on SendTap.
Okay.
I took it from the America blog.
John Arafosis, yeah.
Yeah. It's entitled, White House Reiterates Its Commitment to Repeal don't ask, don't tell. However,
they kind of watered it down, didn't they?
They watered it down just a whole lot.
They watered it down to where it's more water than not.
Yeah. They also, more or less, the last I had heard, they had took off the website the promise to fully support the adoption of children by gay couples. I don't know if that's been put back.
Yeah, they got apparently they got real busy on the website. There's all kinds of stuff gone.
Yeah, this is not
the Iraq page. The whole Iraq page has been deleted.
Good God!
Instead, it's now been replaced with a lonesome little plain simple single paragraph about that exists on the foreign policy page. The civil rights page. Has been dramatically cut. There were 756 words about supporting the LGBT community. They've been replaced by two sentences.
Yeah, this really bothers me. The longer we go, the more this man is looking like another Bush. I'm sorry, he is.
It's getting a little creepy. And just by way of example, Susan. Here's the change. The previous web page on Don't Ask, Don't Tell contained the following words. President Obama agrees with former blah blah Joint Chiefs blah 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 dot dot dot. President Obama agrees that we need to repeal the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy. The key test for military service should be patriotism, a sense of duty, and a willingness to serve. Discrimination should be prohibited. And the president will work with military leaders to repeal the current policy. Okay, here's what replaces that now. The president supports changing Don't Ask, Don't Tell in a sensible way that strengthens our armed forces and our national security, and also believes that we must ensure adoption rights for all couples and individuals, regardless of their sexual orientation. Boop. Do you wish to delete? Yes. Gone. And it is, you know, I'm not ready to call him a another kind of Bush, because there were so many horrors that man committed.
He's headed in that direction.
This so-called moderation is, we will moderate our way to perdition.
Yeah. And it's just, I don't like this in the least. I really don't. It just, And then there's another fun one. This one I put up on the Head-On blog. It's a month until the hurricane season starts.
Yep.
So after sailing through the Homeland Committee hearings, after sailing through the other hearings that this person had to go through, President Obama's pick for FEMA administrator, who was the head, former head of Florida
agency, yeah.
Yeah. Senator Diaper Vitter has put a hold on him, saying,
he's pro, what is he, pro-abortion, liberal activist judge, what?
He hasn't answered several questions about FEMA and about hurricane recovery. And I'm going to say, what?
What?
Yeah,
Well, I'll be happy to answer those questions whenever Senator Vitter answers questions about hookers, okay?
Yeah, I have a hold on the FEMA nomination because I sent a list of hurricane recovery questions and projects to FEMA, many of which have not been adequately addressed.
Well, that doesn't sound like it's his job to answer them yet now, is it?
No.
No, seriously, I'm so tired. And I guess, you know, I guess this just goes to prove that I would be no good up there. But I'm so tired of the nicey-nicey. Really, I mean, the guy should come out and say, I will be happy to answer any question Senator Vitter asks me as soon as he agrees to answer every question I ask him about his interactions with hookers.
And diapers.
Yeah. I mean, is fighting back that hard? Or is that just so not nice that nobody can conceive of doing it in Washington, D.C.?
I'm sorry. I know it's considered not a nice thing, but when are people going to finally realize that Joe Biden was wrong when you said that you cannot call these people liars?
What else are you going to call them, Susan?
Their faces.
What else are you going to call them?
Do it. Call it to them. Call them liars to their faces in Congress. Because then and only then are we ever going to get some action done. And by the way, may I indulge in a mini rant?
Yes, please. Just remember, little Timmy and little Cindy, little Timmy and Cindy are out there.
There won't be any cuss words, but I listen to Stephanie Miller. I like fart jokes. What can I say? I have a low sense of humor.
And mine's right there in the gutter with you.
Yeah. She had a caller today saying that the proposed release of photographs from Abu Ghraib would not be in the best interest of the United States. And this guy managed to convince her that that wouldn't be a good idea. Okay. I disagree. Personally, I think this is a freeper. This was a freeper that called in, and he got her to agree with him because said freeper knows that the majority of this country does not realize that anything exists until they see it on the television.
Yeah, if it's on TV, it's real. If it's not, it doesn't exist.
Exactly. So they know as long as those pictures are kept under wraps, torture never existed. The U.S. public will not get up on its hind legs and demand prosecution for these monsters until they have had their noses shoved into that torture and rubbed in it.
Yeah, until the smell of the blood is in their nostrils. Yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, yeah, and you know, there's something else. I just read something a few minutes ago, Susan. You know, all this business about, we only tortured them because torture works. You know, that Dick Cheney garbage.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not sitting here saying that Abu Zubaydah is going to, you know, win the Nobel Peace Prize or anything anytime soon.
No.
Or should have. This was basically, he was Osama bin Laden's cabbie.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we tortured him. We tortured him 80 some odd times during the month of August alone at one point.
Uh-huh.
And he is, described by, Joseph Margulies in an LA Times article.
As being insane?
Yesterday. This is Abu Zubaydah after what's been done to him. Partly as a result of injuries he suffered while he was fighting the communists in Afghanistan, partly as a result of how those injuries were exacerbated by the CIA, and partly as a result of his extended isolation, Abu Zubaydah's mental grasp is slipping away. Today, he suffers blinding headaches and has permanent brain damage. He has an excruciating sensitivity to sounds, hearing what others do not. The slightest noise drives him nearly insane. In the last 2 years alone, he has experienced about 200 seizures. But physical pain is a passing thing. The enduring torment is the taunting reminder that darkness encroaches. Already, he cannot picture his mother's face or recall his father's name. Gradually, his past, like his future, eludes him. And so the question arises, if that's what happens to the human brain when you torture, how in God's name can you claim that you got any viable information? Because torture erases information. It does not raise it to the surface.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because during the waterboarding, your brain is shut off from its oxygen supply. And what happens when it's shut off from the oxygen supply? It starts to die.
Yep.
Hey, American people, are you proud of yourself yet?
I tell you what, this just makes me want to play some Lee Greenwood music.
Your chest and really stomp around and crow.
I mean, remember the quaint description of walling?
Yeah.
You know, you know what shaken baby syndrome is.
Yes.
Well, you can have shaken adult syndrome too. Basically, you know, that's what repeated concussions do to NFL quarterbacks and boxers. You know, that's shaken grown-up syndrome.
Yep.
And, you know, 200 seizures in the last 2 years. That's 100 seizures. That's a seizure roughly every 3.5 to 4 days.
He's an epileptic. People don't realize how fragile the human brain is. The largest cause of epilepsy in this country today is car wrecks.
Yeah.
Head injuries. Following that are sports injuries. Do you see a pattern here? And you can give a child epilepsy by slapping it upside the head.
Yeah. What was that? The restrained slap? Remember that description, Susan?
Yeah.
Where the person would be put in a headlock and have his air supply cut off and then repeatedly slapped about the head? You know, I understand we have a will toward punishment, and it's real lizard brain stuff.
Yeah.
But there used to be at least a minimum standard that we wanted to make sure the person was guilty before we imposed the punishment.
Do you know what I want done to this country, to this United States? It's not possible. Okay, I have heard that there is film out of Abu Ghraib of a 13-year-old boy being raped.
The Seymour Hersh said a while back that existed.
In order to force his parents to talk. If I had a magic wand, I would do what Third Army did when they liberated a death camp. I would force every man, adult man and woman in this country to watch that film.
Yeah.
And say, see what you have done by your consent. You good little Germans. You good little Eichmanns. This is on you.
Yeah, and speaking of which, it was yesterday when Kinda Sleazy Rice.
Oh, yeah, admitted to a criminal conspiracy.
Well, back on the previous Monday, this past Monday, No, she said that Al Qaeda was a great is a greater threat to the U.S. than the Nazis.
Yeah, and then later in the
I'm getting real tired of people like Condoleezza Rice spitting on my father's grave.
You and me both. Because my father mostly fought in the Pacific, but also his ship carried a commendation signed by Winston Churchill.
Well, I got two graves I can go and visit, Susan. One of them died in the south of France in a diversion to Normandy. And the other one died at Bastogne.
Yep.
And the idea of kind of sleazy Rice hawking up a big old sinus oyster and just plopping it right on their headstones just makes me it brings blood into my eyes.
Yeah, I am frankly glad my father's dead. I really am.
But since they are dead and they cannot defend themselves any longer.
Yeah, it's up to me and it's up to you, but I want those pictures released because I want the people of this country to see what they have done. To quote Jackie Kennedy, let them see what they've done.
Yeah, I agree. Susan, have a good weekend, dear.
Maybe.
Yep.
They'll do something about it. There's one other thing I would like to ask President Obama. I only want one sentence from you. Torture is wrong. It's a crime.
Yeah, he did sort of dance around that at the press conference, didn't he?
Yeah, didn't he? It's wrong. That's all I want to hear. It's wrong. I don't want to hear legalese. I want to hear it's wrong.
You know, I wonder if somewhere in his heart, if there's some portion of his mind that says, "Well, you know, we may have to use it someday. It may, because we may have to let Jack Bauer torture Bin Laden in case there's a suitcase nuke in Poughkeepsie."
Oh, in that case, well, they had a panel on MSNBC, and they brought up that specific scenario. And I was really proud of Jonathan Alter and Ed Schultz because they said, in that case, we do not torture.
In what, see, I'm funny that way. I don't think there's any case in which we do.
But what they were saying was, even in those circumstances, we do not torture. It's wrong.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
But you can't get around that. It's wrong. Thank you. You have a lovely weekend, and give my love to Agnes.
Okie dokie. I certainly will. She's feeling a little more chipper today, but... still, still on the mend.
Tell her to email me, and you can get something sent to her.
Okay, Dave. Okay, Doug. You take care, Susan.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye now. News Ninja Susan, you can find her work at headonradionetwork.com and at Centab. And we roll along. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Juanita.
I got cut off or something, and I called back so you wouldn't think I'd hung up. But, gosh, you've been talking about so much, you give me so many things to think about.
Yeah, I've kind of been all over the board, haven't I?
Well, that's all right. I mean, but I've got to cry about, I mean, I don't know. I can't help but have compassion for people that go through that. And then you think about there's people going through all that right now, like that man that was tortured. That's just unreasonable. And if
well, it's not only yeah, it's also mean, hateful, spiteful, and sadistic and
yeah,
wicked
and
evil.
They didn't do it to get information. They did it for their jollies.
They did it for fun.
Does. Yes, they did it for their self. They like that. I just don't doubt it at all. And anybody that would call a Christian self-Christian would condone that. and say that this is a Christian nation, to condone that, what did Jesus say? You know, love your enemies. It's easy to love your friends, to love those who are kind to you. It's not easy to love those.
Yeah, that's where the work comes in.
Huh?
That's where the work comes in. Yeah, loving people that hate your guts.
Yeah. I mean, you don't have to like them, but it isn't, those aren't the enemies. The enemies are the ones that tortured, ordered the torture. They're the enemies, in my opinion. They're the real enemies.
Perhaps they're the people who are doing, they're the people who are doing the greatest long-term harm to this country. That's for doggone
right.
sure, Juanita.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you know, people don't hate you for no reason, as a rule, if they do hate us. And to say they hate us for our freedom, that's a bunch of crock.
Oh, God. Yeah, they hate us for our home mortgages. Well, they
oh,
don't hate.
Gee.
Yeah, maybe they don't. Well, maybe they don't hate them. Uh-huh. Maybe they don't hate us so much now that our home mortgages turned out to be.
Yeah. But I did want to say, if you don't mind me saying a couple of things. There was one thing about the ER you were talking about,
mm-hmm.
you and Gladys. And, you know, now this is not the worst thing that's ever happened, but I'm going to tell you one experience I had not too long ago, a couple of years ago. I fell at home early one morning, and, of course, it was on the weekend, as you know how that goes. Everything seems to happen on the weekend or at night.
Right.
And I fell in my bathroom, and I could not get up. Something was wrong with my arm. I could not get up, so I had to crawl where his phone was, and finally I got it down and called 911. Well, they came to my door and helped me get up, and they suggested that I try to go to a clinic instead of go in the emergency room. Says you're going to have to wait a long time. I said, I know. And they said, you know, that they could take me, but, you know, it was going to cost a lot of money. I said, yeah, I know. But anyhow, so that was the decision. My son came over, and we rode around, and I was just in agony. We rode around to a bunch of the clinics, you know, the walk-in clinics, and either they were closed or they were just so crowded. And I said, well, why don't we just go ahead and go on the emergency room? We've got a big emergency room in our town. And but I said, I'm not going to go in there without a wheelchair. I said, I want to get you to get me a wheelchair. I said, I'm not going to go in. I'm not going to go in there without a wheelchair, because I knew there's no place to lay down at all.
No.
No place. I mean, those chairs are just not, you can't, and there's no lack of.
They are certainly not designed for patient comfort.
They sure are not. So anyway, of course, they were already starting to get crowded. Well, they took me right back to x-ray me. So then they put me back out waiting. I waited like 4.5 hours before they took me back. And I had one patient had compassion on me and asked the people if they could get me an ice bag, because it was just all I could do, you know, to take it. And so I got back in the back, and I was still waiting. So finally my son, he went and told one of the nurses, says, she's in agony, you know, and can't you do something to help her? So they went and looked at my x-ray, and they got a doctor right that way. And my shoulder had been pulled out of socket. That's why. I had a broke arm, too, but the broke arm wasn't so bad. That was just horrible.
Oh.
And, of course, they bless their heart, they were good. The doctor was real good. And they put me to sleep, and it was amazing how quick that took the pain. But anyway, I was just going to say, it's like a comedy of errors, you know, all that time. And that's nothing compared to what a lot of people have gone through. And another thing, you got doctors there, they're not even working for the hospital. They're working for some other agency. And then, now you're talking about somebody, you know, about them reading your x-rays overseas, which I know that does happen quite often, but they don't get it right away. Now they may now with like they did, you know, send it right over there to them. But if like you're in the, if you go there and the doctor says, like they could have said to me, well, I don't see anything wrong with your x-ray. But that doesn't mean if they're not a radiologist, a radiologist can see stuff that the others can't see.
Right.
I mean, I had them call me one time after an accident, and I had a cracked sternum. And the girl that did the x-ray told me, she said, you got a cracked sternum. But the doctor didn't know there, see. But that's another thing that happens. And then if you can't go further with your treatment, then you're stuck. You know, if you don't have anything kind of coverage, and I've been there, you know, because not having, you know, before I do have Medicare now, but Medicare is not like it used to be. If they would change it to way it was back in before, like what Susan was talking about, those codes, they go by those codes, and that determines how long you're going to be in the hospital, because the less time you spend with something that the government will pay a lot of money to the hospital for, that makes them make more money that they don't have to take care of. I had an aunt that she had a heart attack within one day. Well, I knew they got paid for 4 or 5 days of coverage, no matter what, because they went by the code. Now, there is so much that people don't know. People are just now thinking that things are bad, but this has been going on for ever since So Reagan got in, because I worked in insurance during then, and that's exactly when it changed. Medicare used to be wonderful. If your doctor said you needed to go and have things done, Medicare was so good to pay. But then they got all those other people involved, and, of course, then later on they got into HMOs and all that kind of stuff. And HMOs seemed great to begin with. But then you got those people, you know, and some of them are doctors. They're making big money turning you down. But there's a lot of them are just clerks. And a lot of clerks like to think that they're bosses because they're able to make decisions like that. And it makes them feel like they're a big shot.
Yeah.
And like Susan said, they're a problem on making minimum wage. But it's just a mess. It is a mess. And another thing, and one more thing I just like to say about that is my son had a motorcycle accident, I guess it's about 15 years ago, I forget now. And he was knocked out. He was on his way to work, and the car stopped. He was on the highway. The car stopped suddenly, and to avoid running into the back of him, he ran into the ditch. Well, he was knocked out. He finally came through too. In the ambulance. Well, the place where he worked, he had no coverage whatsoever. And back then, it was hard to get anything kind of coverage for a motorcycle.
Right.
Because of the license rules would change and insurance rules. So he had nothing. They did say he had a concussion. They decided that. But he had no money, and I wasn't able to have him go to a doctor after that. And he had to go back and work. And that's part of what's wrong today, you know, he's disabled today. And that's part of it. You know, people working, and I've done it too, I've worked with the flu many times, I work, you know, be sick as to death and working, because you feel like you got to. And, anyway, I'm just using us for example. I'm not self-pity because I know a lot of people have gone through a whole lot worse situations. But I'm just using it for an example. And those people that think that you get care from going to emergency room, they don't know what they're talking about. Unless they've been through it, they have no idea what they're talking about.
It is. It's a very, very rude awakening when you do.
It is. It really is. And sometimes a lot of people just go and then they just leave and then you're left stuck with whatever ails you. And either you're going to drop dead or maybe someday somebody will have mercy on you and help you out. It's a mess.
Pure and simple. And the thing is, what I'm trying to point out, Juanita, is that it's on how many levels it's a mess.
Yes.
And absolutely. I mean, not to repeat myself too much, not to be too redundant. I was just redundant. But it's not just the insurance problem. We after 12 years of Reagan and Bush and 8 years of dim leader, that's 20 years. And in 20 years, incredible damage can be done. And our health care system, as a result of those 20 years, is broken. I mean, shattered like a china plate thrown on a tile floor, shattered from top to bottom, and from Dan to Beersheba.
Oh, yeah. You're absolutely right. And like I said, it started when Reagan got in. And I don't know if it's from him or if it was just from Congress or what, but everything started changing after he got in. And I was in the middle of it. And you talk about something driving you crazy trying to file for insurance. I went to work for a doctor. And to try to file and get the right code and, to get the doctor a little bit of money, I would rather a doctor. And I've been butchered by a lot of doctors. But I would rather have a doctor who's educated, that I got confidence, that would choose for me what to be done, than somebody that don't know nothing about nothing. And the doctors have really been lost in this situation. The ones that don't give a happy, they're the ones that stay in it and succeed because they'll, when you just give in, kind of like all the Republicans are doing. They know they're on a losing course of what they're saying, but they're going to do it anyway because they can't stand to see somebody else get by.
Yeah.
In other words, they're going along with the system, I guess you could call it. And the system is terrible. It's terrible. But I do know a lot of people. I try to tell people for years, and nobody knew what I was talking about unless you've been in it and worked in it and seen it. And people have thought like, well, things are really getting bad. No, they started bad a long time ago.
Yeah, this is not new.
No, it's not new. But at least more people are becoming aware. And then you got people, they don't care if somebody else isn't covered, as long as they're covered. They don't care.
But those people are not protected, Juanita, because just because you have coverage doesn't mean you won't be destroyed.
No, absolutely not. And some of them come to that conclusion eventually. But there's some of them that just don't, well, I'm covered, and I don't want to lose what I got. But we have to have compassion on other people is the way I feel. And I think that's what our country's supposed to be about, if I'm not mistaken. But like I said, I could cry for that guy. I really could.
Yeah, He was Osama bin Laden's cabbie.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy had no functional, meaningful anything to offer. And the way they found that out was by destroying his brain.
And, Bob, it's going on with some of our citizens, too. It's not just that guy. There's so much torture and torment being done in the name of justice.
Lord, yes. We spend a lot of time talking about what goes on at Guantanamo Bay, but we spend very little time talking about what goes on at Bagram Air Base there in Afghanistan. That's another hellhole.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
another concentration camp.
Mm-hmm.
And, just because we haven't seen a bunch of photos come out of it like we did from Abu Ghraib doesn't mean it isn't happening. We know. I mean, there has been some reporting of what goes on there, And that's, you know, that's just a place where people go in and don't come out.
Yeah, just now coming out. For me, I mean, I haven't heard that much about it until just lately in Afghanistan. It's kind of like,
you know, Barack Obama was right on the campaign trail when he said our Afghanistan policy can't just be a matter of flying around and blowing and shooting missiles at wedding parties.
Yeah, that's right.
But now he's, you know, now apparently he's backing away from that.
I don't know, Bob.
I don't either. And at the end of the day,
friend,
I think that's
my
the...
friend that passed away. She used to say, "Well, we just have to trust in God, hope for the best." But,
and you know you are in a spot when you're down to that.
What do they say? Has it come to this?
Yeah. And that's the sad thing. The answer is yes, it has.
But you know that song, I don't know if it was, is what it meant or not, that the Rolling Stones did, Sympathy for the Devil?
Mm-hmm.
It was like, to me, what it meant was, kind of have to feel sorry for him in a way. You know, this Bible story.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if that's what the song meant or not, but...
Well, yeah, I was thinking about the book of Job the other day. Really, that's the kind of weird little life that I live. I was just sitting around thinking about the book of Job. And, and I'm sure you're as or more familiar with it than I am, Juanita. But you know, there's that
passage. It's a hard book to read.
The whole thing is. I mean, you know, just getting past the pornography parts are gross enough. But in the book of Job, you know, there's that portion, and it happens, I think, a couple of times, where, you know, things have gotten really awful for old Job.
Yeah.
And his neighbors come to him and say, "Why don't you just curse God and die?"
Yeah, that's what his wife wanted him to do.
And his wife told him to as well. Yeah. And I got to think,
you must have done something wrong.
Yeah. And I got to thinking about what that means. If you look at it from a literalist, you know, fundamentalist view, then all he had to do was say, "I curse God," and, you know, poof, lightning bolt, done, greasy spot. But that's probably not how it worked. Because what would have happened is, had Job cursed God, God wouldn't have done anything to Job. His community, however, would have dragged him out of his home, ripped his clothing from his body that was covered in boils in the first place.
Yeah.
Taken him outside the city gates and thrown rocks at him until he was dead.
You're probably right. I never thought about it like that, but you're probably right.
And so,
they definitely would have done that for sure, I'm sure.
So, you know, maybe there's another layer of meaning there where these people are going, "Curse God and die."
Mm-hmm.
Because then the society would get to torture Job to death. And I think there's a degree of applicability to that when we're thinking about people like Abu Zubaydah. You know, he is beset with wickedness. But he would not curse God and die, or maybe he did. Maybe the reason he's had 200 seizures in the last 2 years is because he said "Damn America" at one point when he had enough brains left in him to say something like that, and they waterboarded him a few extra times for it. Of course, we don't know that because we're not being told the whole truth about what went on in that hellhole.
Well, you know, it's like you said about football players. They get all those concussions and all. And you're not left on, you know, just one concussion can screw you up royally.
Yeah, it can.
And you know that that guy had to have more than one. And also, I understand that it turns, so when they waterboard you, that you get carbon dioxide trapped in your lungs or esophagus or something like that. And that poisons your brain. It destroys brain cells.
Right. Well, you know, oxygen death, it doesn't take long for oxygen death to start, or oxygen starvation to start leading to brain death.
Right.
But, yeah, you know, the
these... Like Susan said that there is such a thing as a shaken adult syndrome. I mean, sheesh.
Yeah, that was me. Shaken,
we're delicate.
Yeah, shaken,
we're delicate.
Shaken grown-up syndrome.
Yeah, we're a delicate creature in a lot of ways. We're tough in a lot of ways.
And see, the thing is, though, that and this puts the lie to Jay Bybee and John Yoo and David Addington and all those other filthy sadists. This puts the lie to them, well, you know, it doesn't cause anything. You cannot see a concussion, okay?
No, you cannot.
You can't see a bruise on the brain without a CT scanner or an MRI. And if you don't look, you sure won't find it. So they,
that's right.
So, you know, under the guise of, you know, well, it's not like we're leaving any marks. We're not bruising him or anything. We're just waterboarding him, slamming his head into the wall every now and then. It's not doing him. We're just shaking him real good. Well, the fact of the matter is, it doesn't leave marks. But it most assuredly does physical injury, not just psychological like they talk about.
Well, you know, that to me, that makes my mind go to like Nazis. What they did.
Well, it should, because that's the conduct.
And another, you know, I was thinking yesterday about that woman from South Carolina, the congresswoman, Fox.
Oh, yeah, North Carolina, yeah.
Okay, I saw the boy's mother on Rachel last night, on Rachel Maddow, you know, the boy that was murdered. And she said that what surprised her, she said it wasn't the bad things being said, because she said there was plenty of that before. But she said she'd never heard it called a hoax.
Yeah, when the murder of your baby is called fake.
Isn't that like, there was no such thing as the Holocaust? Isn't that the same difference?
Yes, it is. It's the same
thing.
And
anybody that would say that, don't they have that mindset?
They sure do. It's a tough thing to come around to, isn't it, Juanita?
Yes, it is.
And you know, we're helping. And here's the cherry on top of the whipped cream. We're helping pay her to say all that stuff. She draws a federal salary.
Yeah, she acts. I've seen her, you know, being interviewed, and she acts like she's this wonderful grandmother, you know, or something like that. But appearances are deceiving. Of course, I don't think she's that great to look at. I mean, as far as I know, she's not young. I don't mean that, but you know what I'm saying. Just because you can't go by like somebody looks, you know, people say, oh, they must be nice. They look so good, you know, or they look so sweet.
Right.
I had a boss like that one time. Don't be mean to her, Juanita. She's nice. She's sweet. She wasn't. She not when she was my boss.
No, and just because some, and that, you know, and just be, again, this kind of goes back to that definition of torture in a sort of analogous way. Just because someone isn't screaming at you doesn't mean they're not saying evil, nasty things.
Right. Right.
You know, I can use a completely calm, measured tone of voice and say things to people that I would be ashamed for my mama to know I knew the words how to say.
Yeah. Yeah, and don't you love it when you're able to do that? I admire it when somebody's able to do that. Because I have a tendency to scream, but then if I do sometime, I do say something, and I say it in a, like you say, in a calm way. I'm kind of proud of myself. Because you just, but no, I'm not proud of my, you know what I'm talking about, Bob, I'm not.
I know. I do know what you mean.
Like, I'm not like that girl. She said she was proud of what she stood for that was in the beauty contest.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they asked her about her breast implants, she said, I'm not answering that question. She said, that was, what's his name was talking about that. They were paid. The people that held the contest pay for her to have that.
Right.
But that's beside the point. I wanted to say one more thing.
Oh, by the way, you just got some email in.
I did?
Yeah.
Are they mad?
No. Susan's writing in. She says, regarding the hoax comment, you know, we're talking about Matthew Shepard, regarding the hoax comment made by Juanita, give that lady a toaster. She's the smartest girl in class.
Who, me?
Yeah, you.
Thank you. I think she's brilliant.
You can use, but you could use the toaster, right?
Yeah. I'll find somebody that can. But have you noticed? I noticed today a ton of ads for coal.
Oh, really?
They're bringing up the thing that Obama. They're using the thing Obama said during his when he was running for office. You know about we're Americans. You know we could find a way to make it clean or whatever.
Yeah, we sent a man to the moon. I can't imagine we can't burn coal cleanly. Well, that's well and good, but when he was in Kentucky, he said, I can't imagine that we can't get coal without blowing the tops off of mountains, but they're still blowing the tops off of mountains.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure they are. But I've just wondered why all of a sudden they've gotten stronger in their ads.
Well, it ought to be, I think, you know, just because he's a public person does not mean that all of his pronouncements are out there
are using it.
Yeah, I think it ought to be illegal. I mean, if somebody had video footage of him drinking a Pepsi,
mm-hmm.
would it be okay for Pepsi to put out an ad showing Barack Obama drinking a Pepsi and saying Barack Obama endorses Pepsi? I don't think it would be. It would be an incredibly bad taste, and I think it would be at least marginally illegal. And I think that coal ad is marginally illegal, if not outright illegal.
Yeah. Because he seems to have changed on some of that. You know, he's not talking so much about coal anymore that I've heard. Of course, I don't hear everything.
Well, it's dying. I guess maybe it's dying down some, but I'm still seeing at the liberal websites that I visit, I'm still seeing tons of those clean coal ads. And, you know, I encourage everybody to click on them and cost the coal industry a little bit of money. But the thing is, we're getting half measured to death here in Appalachia, Juanita.
What does that mean?
Well, it means, you know, that we'll get a sign of a little bit of hope, and then a day will pass,
yeah.
And we'll find out that it really doesn't mean what it looks like it means, and that it's
yeah.
just, you know, the same old evil crap is going to continue.
Just like they're gonna investigate the torture, and they're gonna investigate the.
Yeah.
Other stuff.
Yeah, investigate it until we've forgotten they're investigating, mm-hmm. and then make the right.
And you feel like, oh yeah, you know, first hear about yeah, and then you, oh okay.
Bingo.
And you exactly. know, Rove, he came out and said he made a lie out of it. He told a lie about something Obama had said. He said it was a question that somebody had asked Obama. I forget what it was. I guess it was at a town hall or something. And Rove made it like that it was something that Obama had stated for fact, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually he was answering a question.
Right. But, you know, that's what people like him do. They just make stuff
that's
up.
That's the one guy I would, oh, boy, I'd like to see him somewhere else besides where he is.
Oh, I'd just like to see Karl Rove spontaneously combust and just fry in his own fat. But yeah, I don't get my wishes.
One thing more thing about Guantanamo, you know this? Oh, they're going to send those people over here. Well, we had Germans over here during World War II.
You're darn right. They were kept just about 80 miles down the road at the Greenbrier Resort.
Yeah, and they got stuff that the people here couldn't have. They were treated like great.
Yes. True, true, true.
My mother said when she was working at that aircraft place that they sent over, like, you know, German chocolate cakes that they had baked. And my mother said, I wouldn't dare eat that. So those other people just go crazy over it, you know. She said, no telling what they put in there.
That's Nazi cake.
Well, you know, they were still our enemies, you know. It wasn't no telling what they would put in there. But nevertheless, you know, I don't know. These people are just something else. I'm telling you, Bob.
Oh, I know. And the something else that they are is really, really nasty.
Yes, very. And you see it more and more all the time. More and more, day by day.
Oh, I've got a little bit more. Yeah, I've got a little bit more mean-spirited nastiness here in just a couple of minutes. So I'm going to wander along, and you have yourself a wonderful weekend, Juanita. All right, we'll talk soon, Juanita.
And I hope your wife gets better soon. Huh?
Okay. Yeah, Agnes. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know why I want to call her something else, and but it.
She answers to all kinds of names around here.
It's there somewhere. I guess I got shook somewhere.
in the last 8 years, I think we got shook a bunch.
Oh, Lord.
Juanita, well, okay. Take care and have a wonderful weekend.
You too.
Bye now.
Bye night.
Our View correspondent, Juanita, calling from Central Florida. About 10 minutes before the hour, and what she was talking about, that they just seem to keep getting nastier and nastier. You know, I opened the program Wednesday with the words of Virginia Fox, with a murdered boy's mama in the building, in the room, in the gallery, and saying that his murder was a hoax. And said, you know, just proof of how vile these filthy, hateful, wouldn't even want to know that they lived in the same county with you, the evil Republicans, how that they are. And, you know, whether it's Michelle Bachmann saying carbon dioxide is natural, or any of the crazy. Well, there's the new wave of crazy, or a new participant in the new wave of crazy. And by new wave, I don't mean like, you know, cool new wave, like, you know, Rick Ocasek with a skinny tie back when the cars were hot. No. I'm talking about, in this instance, Steve King, Iowa. From the 5th Congressional District in Iowa. What's wrong with the people in the 5th Congressional District of Iowa? I have no idea, but there must be something profoundly wrong with them. He took to the House floor yesterday to talk for an hour. An hour. What an hour that must have been. More hissy having about... President Obama shaking hands with Hugo Chavez. More hissy having about the hate crime legislation that merely enhances the hate crime legislation that was passed in 1968. More of that, you know, because it protects people like Matthew Shepard from being beaten to death just for being gay. And then he got around to, well, sooner or later, they take the rubber masks off and put the white hoods on. And you see the Repiglican Party for the damn bunch of filthy old hateful Klansmen that they are. And that's what Steve King did yesterday on the floor of the House.
And I brought out some of them. But when the gentleman from Minnesota talked about his reverence for Acorn, his reverence for La Raza, that also comes with Congressional Black Caucus, a Hispanic Caucus, a whole list of separatist groups here that exclude members from their list. There are a whole lot of members of Congress that can't walk into either one of those caucuses that I mentioned. They wouldn't be accepted in there. They can't be members because they aren't the right race.
Steve, buddy, there are a whole bunch of places in this country where members of the Congressional Black Caucus and members of the Congressional Hispanic Caucus are not welcome or are treated differently for being Hispanic or black. You know, you're white America. See, this rises to the level of, you know how much I love The Onion, right? The parody satire website. Those guys have got to be having a hard, hard time because their ability to do satire is running so close to what the realities are of the right wing. That it's almost impossible to tell the difference between parody and reality. Um, in just as an example, okay, you heard Steve King, really, a congressman from Iowa, really. You just heard him decrying the fact that he can't be a member of the Congressional Black Caucus because they're a separatist group. That's what he called them, a separatist group, right? You heard that. Well, The Onion had this bit the other day, please let me find this. I had the link just the other day. An Onion bit of a Republican congressman rising on the floor of the House to decry gang members in his neighborhood. And it was hilarious. But then I see this business with Steve King, and it's not so funny anymore. Here it is. Just listen for a minute, and then we'll play the reality. If you want to go find it over at The Onion... live from Congress, representative wants to rid Congress of gang members.
I rise in support of H.R. 1277, the Gang Prevention and Community Safeguard Act. Now, this bill is a comprehensive approach to a growing national threat, violent criminal gangs in our communities. Friends, you know me, I grew up in a small town, Frankton, Indiana. It used to be a perfect place to raise a family. Today, that peaceful town I loved is really just a memory. That's all because gang members like this. Now terrorize this once happy little town.
Okay, now bear in mind, this is video, so it's kind of like dancing about architecture. But gang members like this, he shows a picture of a well-dressed African-American man with glasses who's reading a book. Gang members like this. This is Representative John Porter, Republican from Indiana's 8th District.
Just recently, my neighbors of 30 years, the Donahues, moved out of their home. Who moved in? 3 gang members.
Yeah, 3 gang members, a black man, his wife, and beautiful little daughter. Loading stuff for a picnic into the back of their SUV.
Their male leader claims he is in mergers and acquisitions, gang code for drug smuggling operations. His wife? Well, she spends lots of time in their garden, probably harvesting marijuana to sell to neighborhood children. Gangs have become endemic to every aspect of our society. People can no longer even go to the fast food restaurant, order a hamburger.
Here we go. Wait for this.
Hamburger without worrying that the gang member serving it might be placing crack cocaine between the packs. What's worse, even this very Congress is now riddled with gang members. As I look out over this once august body, I see 4 gang members sitting here.
Right? Now, back to... The weirdness of reality in the Congress and Steve King of Iowa.
Caucus, a whole list of separatist groups here that exclude members from their list. There are a whole lot of members of Congress that can't walk into either one of those caucuses that I mentioned. They wouldn't be accepted in there. They can't be members because they aren't the right race. And they get a pass, and I just say, let's treat everybody equally. Let's treat everybody equally. Let's just recognize we're all God's children. We're created in His image. And He's seen fit to bless us with characteristics so we can tell each other apart. Why do we fight that?
Now, why do we fight that? Well, see, it's not so we can tell each other apart. Jesus, the GOP has officially jumped the they're jumping a tank full of sharks. God has blessed us with characteristics whereby we can tell each other apart. You hateful old fool. That's the whole point. We're not supposed to tell each other apart based on the color of our skin. Because, see, at that point, you've moved into Dr. Seuss world, and you're living among the Sneetches. You know, some with stars upon theirs and those without stars upon ours. Why do you want to tell each other apart, Congressman King? Why? Did God bless you a little bit more when he made you white? Because it's pretty obvious that's what you think.
Why don't we just accept that and recognize it and be grateful that he has a wisdom that maybe we don't see as well as we should?
Wisdom? Is it wisdom when, you know, the people like you leave dark-skinned people hanging from trees or bobbing in rivers? Is that wisdom, Congressman King? You sick old freak.
But instead, we have a legislative...
So he calls out the Congressional Black Caucus and the Congressional Hispanic Caucus. Well, also yesterday, Congressman John Boehner, released a little video of his. Asking if Americans feel safer under President Obama. And of course, it too, like Steve King's weird-ass comments on the floor, includes a reference to President Obama shaking hands with Hugo Chavez. But being a video, it has pictures going with it too. And after the horrifying pictures of President Obama shaking hands with Hugo Chavez, it then cuts to an even more scary picture. It's a picture of President Obama sitting around, oh my God, with members of the Congressional Hispanic Caucus. The video has been called out for the racism it is. Representative Raul Grijalva of Arizona said the video was not only inflammatory but also racist. Michael Steele, different Michael Steele, no E on the end of his name, is a spokesman for John Boehner. And he said that the Congressional Hispanic Caucus's criticism was, and these are his words, beyond silly. Yet racism is beyond silly. And maybe it is beyond silly. It's beyond silly and way over into reality. It's another one of those non-denial denials that we're forever getting from the Republican Party. He didn't say, oh, that's not racist. He said it's beyond silly. Which leaves open to consideration the fact that perhaps it most certainly is racist. And, of course, these things don't happen in a vacuum. On the one hand, well, these both happened on the same day. What Steve King was doing on the House was bolstering the hate and the vitriol that is endemic within the Republican Party and is manifested in videos like this. John Boehner. A horse's rear end who is part and parcel of the monumental failure that is the Republican Party. We'll take a little break, the first of the program. Take a little break and come back. Your calls are welcome at 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. And 304-658-3333, this is This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is Activist Radio. This is The Horn.
Power, power, crying, cause you got power. Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Brock.
John Boner and the Bone Tones, or whatever name we described to them. Actually, John Fox, genius piece of work. Lion. The Pig Lickin' Party theme song. Seventh grade Romeo Ferg is home from his dance and back on duty.
I danced with like 10 girls.
Yeah, he danced with like 10 girls. Just call him Mr. Heartbreak. It was awesome, yes, it was awesome. We've got about 45 minutes worth of conversation left in the program. Jump on the line if you want to, 877-443-2366. Hey, never called the program before? We've never lost a caller yet. Don't be afraid. Jump right in. It'll be fine. 877-443-2366 or on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Preston is on the line, our buddy Preston from Denver. Hey, Preston, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
How's it going?
All right. I've actually seen that Representative Steve King from Iowa a couple times on C-SPAN, and it was always just terrible. And there was a part of me that was like, gosh, why is C-SPAN even broadcasting this guy? But there's another part of me that's like very glad they do, you know, just to expose this person. I mean, his sort of rhetoric can work in certain circles, sadly. Minorities, I believe. But when a broader audience sees it, there's the potential for a response to put an end to it, or at least call it out, you know, for what it is.
Yeah.
So, anyway, hopefully Mr. King's getting a few letters and requests from the American people to change his tone a little bit.
Yeah, or go jump off a bridge, or, right, I mean, that's me, because I'm hateful. I just, you know, I wish somebody would like run over him with a slow-moving combine harvester or something up in Iowa, but yeah. I'm cruel.
Yeah. Well, you're mad, understandably. Speaking of infuriating political stuff going on here in Denver, several senators, representatives are moving along a bill to spend $50 million for a NASCAR racetrack.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, and also some, like, gift shops of kind of ye old Western themes. And
yeehaw!
Rodeo.
Well, I know, yeah, and apparently it's a plague upon the nation, because I did notice, Preston, that Piyush Jindal down there in Louisiana is trying to use a bunch of taxpayer money to pay off the New Orleans Saints football team just to keep them in New Orleans.
Yeah. What a ridiculous...
Yeah, it's not like, you know, how nice to know that New Orleans has completely recovered from Hurricane Katrina and its aftermath.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now that
right.
They've got money to throw around on the Saints.
Right. Exactly. So, I don't know. I'll keep you posted as to whether this, again, a market being imposed on a population. There certainly wasn't any talk of a vote for this. It would fail. But, so we'll see. And, well, what else? You know, the Green Festival, on a lighter note, the Green Festival is coming to town, a more organic market, certainly some efforts to market it, to create it. But, you know, there's also a huge latent demand for these sorts of green businesses, eco-entrepreneurial stuff going on. What else? And I think, it's interesting how radical people are meeting with more mainstream people at this Green Festival, like Hickenlooper, the mayor's going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
The governor may be there, and so will John Perkins. So, you know, these different once segregated communities are interacting, and I think that's a great thing. So.
Well, it's wonderful when you see people working toward a common purpose that has such high potential for beneficial action.
Yep.
And, you know, that's one of those, yeah, gives you hope kind of moments.
Yep. And this Green Festival, also the media being done around it has been interesting. The community radio station has plugged it. They're doing some sort of, Amy Goodman's going to be speaking there, and she's going to do a fundraiser for the community radio station while she does, you know, while she speaks some more at the Green Festival. And then last night I was watching one of the mainstream stations, Channel 7. The weather guy said that it was going to be kind of a cloudy weekend, but a great weekend to go to the Green Festival.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, yeah. And so getting good publicity like that. So, again, another point of collaboration among liberal-minded people. But, of course, the right wing never stops. And, you know, I don't know.
No, and I'm sure somewhere along the way you've got enough right wing media there in Denver that someone will find a way to make light of it.
Mm-hmm. But even there, they seem to be making some concessions. You and I had that conversation earlier this week when you were off. But I had mentioned to you how Mike Rosen, the leading right wing ideologue in Denver, with a 17-year-long slot at the 50,000-watt station. So more of a national host, actually. That signal goes into, like, 30 states, especially at nighttime. But even during the day, 50,000 watts moves. And he's often very unreasonable and angry at dissenting callers and stuff like that. But he had David Sirota come, and they debated. He still had more control over the discussion, but still he had him in there, and Sirota was just fantastic. Challenged Mike at every turn, won many points, and in fact, the KOA audience was asked to vote who won, and over 60% of that crowd said David won the debate, and it was a moving hour and a half of radio for sure here in Denver and beyond. So anyway,
well, I can't imagine David Sirota would lose to a right winger just because of the way they are. There's some change happening in terms of, I think, you know, people. And I think it's what scares the GOP half out of its wits, what wits it has left.
Mm-hmm.
What scares them is the fact that American, you know, like the lyric in that parody song that I just played says, you know, the American people have wised up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've seen that this stuff is poisonous and doesn't work.
Yeah.
So, you know, with any luck at all, that trend will continue. But, you know, but we still have to keep pressure on to make sure that the Democrats don't slide back into their middle-of-the-road habits, because they want to make that slide real bad.
Right, right. We just had a Senator Bennett vote on the side of the banks regarding some potential legislation to, if the banks were going to foreclose, something like renegotiating terms with people who are losing their homes, especially since the people had just bailed out the banks. But Bennett voted against that. You'd all voted for it. So anyway, yeah, it's difficult.
Well, there was huge pressure brought to bear on that banking bill. And a lot of people got, I think even Dick Durbin, Democrat from Illinois, it got downright pissed insofar as
the banks.
Yeah, the control that the banks exerted over the consideration of that legislation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, didn't he make a comment, something like, the banks basically own the place, Congress.
Yeah, he did.
Or something like that. Yeah.
And he was, yeah, he was right. I mean, the banksters will sort of stay out of the fray until they think that, you know, that their fat's going in the fire, and then, you know, all hell breaks loose.
Yeah, I think banks are number one in their lobbying money, and I think big pharmaceutical companies are way up there. Of course, agribusiness, you know, Monsanto, Archer Daniels Midland, they're way up there. They've been getting some interesting news lately, or some more analysis, you know, with this flu going on. A lot of people think it was connected to that subsidiary of Smithfield.
And it's looking more and more like it was, and especially because Smithfield is doing so much message management to try to try to deflect that reality. That's you bring me to another topic, Preston, and it's something that I had meant to get at anyway. It's so infuriating to try to be a conscious or reasonably conscious consumer, and I hate that word in the first place, buyer of stuff.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you hear Smithfield, you think, well, you know, if I stay away from anything labeled Smithfield, I'm okay. You're not.
Right.
If you've ever eaten Eckrich smoked sausage, you're eating Smithfield.
Mm-hmm.
If you've ever eaten the Paula Deen collection, Smithfield. Valleydale, Smithfield. Stadler's Country Ham, Smithfield. When you go to the grocery store on Thanksgiving, you say, oh, that butterball turkey costs a little more, but that's a better turkey, Smithfield. And you don't know where it comes from.
Yeah.
I mean,
mixed sausage sandwich, maybe. I don't know where they're.
Comes
from, but
Gwaltney. You know, all these things, you look in the grocery store and it looks like they're competing brands. The Armour. For the love of God, Armour.
Yeah. Yep.
Is Smithfield.
Yeah. In some ways, there's kind of a perception of choices, but sometimes not so much.
Yeah, Patrick Cudahy, I'm familiar with that brand. All these things look like the Peanut Shop of Williams, Peanut Shop of Williamsburg, Smithfield. You know, what blows me away out of all of this is that, you know, A, you have, unless you are a really, really cognizant consumer, you have no way of knowing this stuff, because it doesn't say anywhere on the label, a subsidiary of Smithfield Meats, Union Busters, you know, Union Busters to the world.
And free markets would demand that, you know, information for the consumer to make a rational choice.
Right. Well, capitalism would demand it. And, you know, this is more proof that this isn't capitalism. What's staring us in the face, and the right wing would just turn purple with rage if they heard me say it, is we're looking at communist style, and this isn't me gooning on the communists, okay?
I know what you mean, though, yeah.
This is command economy stuff.
Yeah. Yep, that's what it is.
Where there is, you know, how dare they say that something's by Armour or Butterball or Cumberland Gap or Eckrich? It's not by any of those. It's by Smithfield. But the thing is, if they actually brand and label everything with what it is, then you suddenly see that what we're being told is capitalism is actually Leninist, Maoist command economy stuff.
Yep. Yep. And,
Peanut shop? I don't want to buy peanuts from somebody that does disease-ridden pork. Malloy, referenced last night an article in Rolling Stone, that one of our listeners then sent along to me. The numbers that are contained in that story are a pure horror.
Yeah.
Of what it means when we talk about massive industrial food animal farming.
Yeah, command and control and centralization, big time. I saw a figure something like, you know, 50 years ago, it was 1.5 million farmers, I think in Mexico, maybe the U.S. too. Anyway, like 1.5 million farmers, small family farmers, watching over like 50 million pigs. And now it's 60,000 huge processing factories going through, you know, 70 million pigs.
Well, just consider, I mean, and I'm looking at this article now. It's at Rolling Stone. It's called Boss Hog. There's a photograph there of just a mountain of dead pigs just laying there for some reason or another. The number of hogs that Smithfield kills in the year 2005, Smithfield killed 27 million hogs that weigh 1.5 times the size of a human being. And the way that Jeff Teets, who wrote the article, describes it, the way that he puts it in context, that's roughly the equivalent to butchering and boxing the entire human populations of New York, Los Angeles, Chicago, Houston, Philadelphia, Phoenix, San Antonio, San Diego, Dallas, San Jose, Detroit, Indianapolis, Jacksonville, San Francisco, Columbus, Austin, Memphis, Baltimore, Fort Worth, Charlotte, El Paso, Texas, Milwaukee, Seattle, Boston, Denver, Louisville, Washington, D.C., Nashville, Las Vegas, Portland, Oklahoma City, and Tucson. Now, you can't do that and not have some real nastiness going on. And if you read the article, you will read all the... I mean, I got about halfway through it, and I just kind of had to go, can't do this anymore. This is too ugly.
You know, I don't agree with every tactic or whatever of PETA, but, you know, this is one of many important issues that they've been raising consciousness about. Just this... concentration of, you know, food decision making stuff, and just the lack of any consideration for workers there or for the animals, of course, who many consider relatives, and they're just being so abused, brutalized. It's torture, accepting torture for animal world. So thankfully, I think there's going to be even more of a demand. Again, I think a more organic, humane, moral market, a greater demand for free-range chickens and pigs happy in their sties for however long they live until, you know, they do get sacrificed in a way. But still, treat them decently while they're here. It can be done. It's been done in the past. I don't know if you got to check out that DVD that I sent you called Renewal, about the rise of the religious organizations getting involved in the environmental movement. But one segment is on Jewish people and Muslim people working together in a community to make sure the meat that they eat meets their standards, which includes humane treatment and, you know, conscious methods of slaughter, stuff like that. And they actually went out and visited the farm of the person they were working with, contracting with. And the animals, the chickens come out of their, you know, their cribs, and they come rushing outside. And you can just look at them. They are happier. They're happier beings. You know, we don't know their language per se, but they're speaking to us. And so plant world, too, I think, in many ways.
But, oh, yeah. You know, you know, the guy to read on all of this is Michael Pollan.
Yes.
The Omnivore's Dilemma is still high on my list of important reads of my recent lifetime. With this Rolling Stone article, of course, the real fascinating stuff happens in the comments section, as is so often the case. When I quit reading the actual article earlier today, I read the comments, and one of the things I noticed was, you know, it's just like what we deal with here in West Virginia with coal. You've got these people who are blowing up mountains, destroying communities, and poisoning their neighbors, and if you criticize the operation, you're trying to take my job away. All right. Well, lo and behold, down in the comments of this Rolling Stone article, what do I see? All you vegetarians are just going to mess everything up for the people that are working their butts off to feed the majority of America, which is not vegetarian and make an honest living.
Right, right.
Because all of these corporate employees have been are, for all intents and purposes, victims of the Stockholm Syndrome.
Yep, yep. And they also, they're sent through education, you know, sessions.
Yeah, every day.
Kind of re-education camps going.
Yeah, little notes in the paycheck. The environmentalists are trying to get your job and put your children on the welfare.
Yep. I know Walmart workers who had a couple sessions, discussions regarding the film, you know, the critical film. What is it called?
The High Cost of Low Prices?
Yes, yeah, that's it. That's it. They had a session on that, kind of like how to respond to people who may have seen this film. And, you know, customers might, you know, see it and bring it up, and our coworkers, whatever. So they give their PR responses. It's interesting. But anyway, yeah, but the left, I think, is doing some better PR. Again, I keep referencing the Greenfest thing, but they had lots of brochures and passes and this and that. Oh, speaking of guerrilla marketing kind of stuff, or marketing, I created a list on Amazon called Progressive West Virginia regarding some of the books and stuff from authors there, or movies from directors from West Virginia and so forth. And I mentioned you in it. I'll forward it to you later on. But
oh, great.
You might get a kick out of it.
Very definitely.
Anyway, I'll check out that Rolling Stone article. They're still doing some great work for sure. I need to subscribe to that, I think, actually.
Well, you know, I can point to the end of my Rolling Stone subscription as the beginning of my entry into geezerhood.
Okay.
I probably should do something about that. I need to read some more hip stuff, if Rolling Stone can still be deemed hip.
I think it is, definitely.
Well, that's yeah. Ferg over here in the background laughing at the geezer, me.
Yeah. I saw a picture in Rolling Stone of Colin Powell, who I don't like in many ways. You know, the PR he did for the Miley
right.
massacre. And the, you know, that whole performance at the UN regarding Iraq's chemical arsenal and all that stuff. Still, this photo of him I liked. And then he did speak out on some things. He went after Limbaugh. I thought that was huge.
Yeah.
Something, you know, that...
Well, there, you know, the Republican Party has, even when it's functioning something close to normally, it has tremendous problems just because of the ideology involved, because they are enablers of the worst of America. But there are people out there who, you know, were part of a Republican Party that was at least capable of a coherent idea once in a while.
Yeah.
And I guess Colin Powell considers himself part of that. I guess Arlen Specter considered himself part of that. But you know, that party's dead and gone. You know, when you have to look up and, you know, sort of, you know, slap yourself with the palm of your hand and on the forehead, when you realize that if they were alive politicians today, Richard Nixon and Dwight D. Eisenhower, neither of them would be welcome in the Republican Party.
Yep, that's so true.
Yeah. Richard Nixon?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the guy who, politically speaking, gave birth to Donald Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney, Richard Nixon would not be welcome in the Republican Party. You know, because he went around talking crazy stuff about living a living wage. And created the EPA, and OSHA came to life during his administration. This is not you know, I have not come to praise Nixon, but to bury him. But the fact of the matter is, those are all things that are damned for their liberalism by the you know, the crusty old worn out fringe element white party that is the GOP now.
Yeah,
And see, there's no one in the party with any ability, even if they had the intent, with the ability to bring the Republican Party back into line. So it kind of has to just continue on this arc, this downward arc that it's on, where I really think it does go away. But the question is, in going away, Preston, what happens to the Democratic Party? Because we're going to be, you know, just as the Republican Party was hit by a flood of old, unrepentant racists as a result of the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act, so too the Democratic Party will be hit by, it is being, has been hit by a wave of people who are not liberal, who have not a shred of progressive credentials or credibility about them, but, you know, came over to the Democratic Party because the Republican Party had, you know, gone so thoroughly insane that they just couldn't be there anymore. And sadly, that changes the ideological weight of the Democrats.
Yeah. And, you know, the two main parties should be Democrats and progressives. And the Republicans, they can still be there, but let them be kind of on the margins, getting 3% of the votes and the money and the media attention. And, you know, let's have it be Nader and Carville, you know, less Carville and Gingrich or whatever. But before I let you go, and I very much want to hear your other callers and stuff, there are three quick things.
Okay.
The Rolling Stone photo I was getting to of Colin Powell, he was celebrating the Obama victory, and he was with a rapper, you know, a gangster, you know, public enemy number one. I forget who it was. It wasn't Kanye West, but someone like that. You know, their arms around each other, and they're both singing, Everything's Gonna Be All Right, that verse from that Bob Marley song, No Woman, No Cry. And I thought it was a beautiful shot. And secondly, a couple weeks ago, you and I were talking about how Obama had chosen to get rid of the bust of Winston Churchill, and that his grandfather was a Kenyan.
Yes.
And I think we had thought that he was killed by the British colonial forces. He wasn't, but he was imprisoned by them.
Yes.
And tortured.
And tortured. Don't forget the torture.
Yeah. And came out. In a way, he did die, you know, like a soul death almost.
Yeah, well, when you get tortured, something in you dies.
Yeah. I think in some ways it harms your faith in humanity, that you can see humans do this stuff to each other. And it rocks your faith in your kind. But they're mostly aberrations. I think most of us, at least through most of our lives, we come across basic decency again and again and again. I see that work. I work with all sorts of different people too. And again, a lot of people who are frowned upon by society, oftentimes people who had been in jail, divorced people, and moms with three kids maybe, and, you know, all that stuff. And, you know, all the kind of crimes of poverty, maybe a prostitution arrest or something. But they're just wonderful, super intelligent, funny, tough people. And I learned so much from them. And, anyway, the Africa story regarding British colonialism, I want to mention a book called Imperial Reckoning. The Untold Story of Britain's Gulag in Kenya. This has been kind of a hidden history. And it talks about how the British, that this war in Kenya was one of the bloodiest in the decolonization struggles of the past century. It was anything but the, quote, civilizing mission portrayed by the British propagandists and their settlers. Instead, Britain engaged in an amazingly brutal campaign of ethnic cleansing that seemed to border on outright genocide. While only 32 white settlers were killed by Mau Mau insurgents. Elkins reports that tens of thousands of Kenyans were slaughtered, perhaps up to 300,000. The British also interned the entire 1.5 million population of Kikuyu, the colony's largest ethnic group, in barbed wire villages, forced labor reserves, where famine and disease ran rampant, in prison camps that Elkins describes as the Kenyan Gulag. The Kikuyu were subjected to unimaginable torture, or screening, as British officials called it, which included being whipped, beaten, sodomized, castrated, burned, and forced to eat feces and drink urine. British officials later destroyed almost all official records of the campaign. Elkins infuses her account with the riveting stories of individual Kikuyu detainees, settlers, British officials, and soldiers. This is a stunning narrative that finally sheds light on a misunderstood war for which no one has yet been officially held accountable. So, anyway, so again, the Obama presidency, with certainly all sorts of policy disappointments, but there's something powerful in the symbolism and, you know, the reality of this, you know, these connections with these struggles.
Oh, without a doubt. And I would like for, you know, I would like, you know, spiritually or psychologically or whatever the appropriate word is, I would like to see a little bit more of that kinship. Because I think with that we would become a little bit more, a little bit less hated around the globe. And see, I'm one of those people that doesn't want America hated because I think that winds up making people fly planes into buildings. On the other hand, there's an ideology and a mindset on the other side of the political spectrum in this country that adheres to that old, you know, that old saw about, I don't care if they like me as, I don't care if they hate me as long as they fear me.
Right. I hear that line a lot on this, KOA station, the 50,000 watt station. And again, people just kind of absorb that if it goes unchallenged or they don't see any sort of options, but yet transitioning from a kingdom to a kingdom, I think Carolyn Casey, this astrologer, calls it, that's what we need, more of a kingdom.
Yes.
Lose the G.
Yeah.
And one last thing before I let you go. I learned about lemon balm recently. I don't know if you have that growing.
Oh, the herb? Yeah. I'm quite familiar with it.
And apparently lemon balm is like an easy food, creates a lot of easy food for bees to get to, producing a lot of nectar. And I'm hoping maybe someday those hills in West Virginia that have been so assaulted and planted with that non-native species, you know, maybe people can reclaim those in little bits. Do you think there's any potential for that? Like people...
Well, you know, that's one of the things that if people would get serious about what's going on here, and by people, I mean the corporations that do... see, the mountaintop removal corporate thugs, they're supposed to reclaim all these sites that they blow up, but in actuality, only, less than 3% of all sites have been reclaimed.
Okay.
And they're not going to either. They post these piddling little bonds, and then they leave town when they've raped all the profit they can get out of the ground. They leave town, and they leave the mess for us to clean up. And it's the kind of thing that corporate America is not going to do because they can't figure out a way to make a profit out of it. And it's so urgent that we get the Obama administration to understand that we can eliminate mountaintop removal and keep every last mountaintop removal worker on the job reclaiming the messes they've already made.
Yep.
You know, D9 cats work on mountaintop removal sites and reclamation sites.
Yeah.
And so there's plenty of, because these aren't miners. These aren't people who are going in under the earth and these are heavy equipment operators who call themselves miners because they think it carries some sort of panache in the mountains.
And let's hire some more light equipment operators and people on foot and bicycles. I'm kind of happy to see more, people downtown riding bikes and, you know, walking and stuff like that. But, you know, park rangers, you know, foresters and, herbalists, rewilding some of our you know, monoculture ecologies that have been made up.
To answer your question, Preston, we don't know what can happen in the short phrase for is PMLU, post-mine land use. We don't know what can be done because nobody's really looking at it. God knows the coal companies aren't. Because their answer to post-mine land use is to put a prison on it or to put a really cruddy golf course on it.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact of the matter is, you know, we can talk about what can happen there. But again, it's going to be one of those things that it's going to be one of those questions the private sector can't answer because the private sector can't figure out a way to serve their God holy profit out of it. But you know, for right now, one of the reasons they have to spray, you know, and it's a liquid goo. It's a green goo, that's a mixture of water and nutrient and grass seed. And they literally spray it out of a fire hose across the so-called reclaimed areas, and it sprouts grass. It is the ecological equivalent of a chia pet. And they have to spray those non-native grasses because native grasses won't grow because all it is, I mean, it's not even topsoil. It's a pathetic layer. It seen from space, it would look like a pile of gravel. Okay.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're not really doing necessary work. You know, sure, they're studying some at Virginia Tech, blah, 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 blah. And you know, they're real proud of themselves because, hey, we got a maple tree to grow for 10 years here. Well, hell, I can grow a maple tree in a bucket for 10 years.
Mm-hmm. I wonder, are there some non-native species that can be beneficial? I mean,
most of the people I know don't think so because these non-native species, prevent the native species from, even under the circumstances where they could survive, they keep them from surviving. And because, even tree seedlings, okay, a tree seedling sprouts like a grass seedling does, and it comes up out of the earth the same way. These grasses choke off the trees. You know, we're talking about hardwood forests. I mean, this isn't the replanted pulp forests of southern pine lands that are grown for, you know, telephone power poles and pulpwood factories. These were hardwood forests. It's part of that mindset that's almost impossible to imagine. But as soon, you know, when the white people first arrived here, as soon as you got off the verges of the beach, it was a hardwood forest all the way across to the Great Plains.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to imagine that, but that was that world. You know, the chestnut blight wiped out the American chestnut tree in the East, and that was the dominant species.
Yeah.
And so that part of the canopy was wiped out.
Yeah.
And you know, what little we have left, I mean, most of West Virginia was clear-cut 100 years ago. I was pointing that out to Ferg the other day as we were driving along the road. I said, look at all those trees there. Because, you know, the green isn't all the way on yet. And I said, they look kind of skinny, don't they? And he said, yeah. And I said, well, that's because they were all cut down. I mean, there are photographs of counties in this state that barely had a tree left in them 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Because the capitalists came in, and even where they weren't getting coal or building railroads, they cut all the trees down because, you know, we were just another resource sacrifice zone. And we have been from the moment this state became a state on June 20th, 1863. So, you know, what can grow, we don't know. But we do know that, you know, we know what was there and we know what won't grow in stuff as they've altered it.
Mm-hmm. Wangari Maathai has been doing such interesting work on replanting areas of Kenya, actually. I was talking earlier about the British savagery there, but part of the nation's healing, and there's still such a legacy too, but part of the healing is stuff like, you know, Wangari's Maathai's tree planting. I think the British did a lot of deforestation in Kenya, and there were other things going on, but the replanting effort, and she ran into a lot of, you know, resistance from authorities who, I don't know, thought it was some crazy communist idea or whatever. some crazy, crazy idea. But, yeah, she was beaten and jailed for her efforts, but overcame it. And so, but there are people doing that sort of stuff here, replanting. I know there are people in the High Plains who are taking down some old barbed wire fencing and taking that down so the birds aren't getting caught in it. And they're also working on replanting native grasses that they think will be much better carbon sinks, by the way, and just rebuild the soil in many ways. And they're also envisioning bringing back a whole bunch of buffalo again, make it like America's Serengeti. You know, something else that would be a huge market, you know, moneymaker, you know, a tourism. The tourism of having something like that in America would be huge. And, you know.
And all of that always runs counter to the corporate dynamic of, yeah, but we want to put a corporate feedlot here. We want to feed and slaughter 950,000 hogs here.
Right, and that monoculture of the mind that they're so attached to. I mean, they can't stand multiculturalism. It's, again, it's control issues, concentration. The, you know, they're the communist. Again, not to dog all communists, but you know, just the stereotype of that.
Well, and what we're talking about, the negative stuff we're talking about, Preston, it really isn't communism. It's Stalinism.
Yeah, that's a better word.
And it's it because that was poisonous. I mean, we talk about the environmental nightmares we have here across what was the former Soviet Union. There are horrible, horrible, you know, not just Chernobyl.
Yeah.
Horrible environmental nightmares. The same thing goes for Cuba. Because of the economic pressures that the capitalist West put on them, they couldn't afford the luxuries of environmentalism.
Yeah, yeah. They're doing interesting things now, though, to, again, part of their healing process. When they lost, when the Soviet Union collapsed, they lost their major fossil fuel provider and their provider of parts for their tractors and all kinds of stuff.
Right.
And to work their way out of that, through that, they've planted all these urban gardens. They've done a lot of small wind and water projects. And what else? Transportation-wise, a lot of innovative stuff, using trailers as mass transit cars. And it's been really
on a grand societal scale, the functional equivalent of making bricks without straw.
Yeah, yeah. And so there are delegations from other countries actually going and studying what they've done, and so it's kind of fun to see.
It is indeed. Preston, have yourself a wonderful weekend.
Yeah, you do the same, Bob.
All right, we'll talk soon.
Sounds good. Bye-bye.
Bye. So it's about 7 minutes before the hour, and that brings us to the close of the program. Just for those of you who like to keep track of the little world, our little world here in West Virginia, even though Agnes was not feeling her best yesterday, today the sun rose on a rather special day around here. 16 years she and I have been married today. Thank you, Ferg.
You're welcome. I love you.
I love you, too. You owe your very existence to this day.
High five.
Low five. Now it's our 16th wedding anniversary. And so we sort of just spent the day, we drove out and took care of some stuff together and just sort of looked at each other in sort of stunned amazement that we've been at this for 16 years, this thing called marriage. So that's what today is. A lot of water over the dam and under the bridge. We got married on a sunshiny day on a little rolling low hilltop in West Virginia outside. It was a rather nervous time. my all of my groomsmen were armed, including me, because there was some danger. And in the middle of the vows, Agnes screamed, "Oh, my God." And all of my groomsmen reached into their coats to pull out and formed a circle around her to protect her. And she began to leap and gyrate about. Agnes is allergic to bee stings, and a bee had flown down her dress. And that was the beginning of our married life. So, God willing, or Flying Spaghetti Monster willing, Nada willing, we will have a 17th anniversary this time next year. But to those of you who are married and have been married, you know what kind of work goes into it. And I'm stunned by the idea that 16 years that we have been married that long. It just blows my mind. It is the first day of May, a new month of raising the necessary funds to keep this operation on the air has also commenced. Thanks to everyone who got us up to about $1,300 last month. It was as a result of some heroic activity, and it is sincerely appreciated. Hopefully we can do something similar. $700 worth of red ink beats the dickens out of $1,200 worth of red ink. And your efforts are so very important and so very appreciated. PayPal buttons over at headonradionetwork.com. And the snail mail address if you don't like to use PayPal. Either one's fine, and we can always use your help, however it is that you can help. Thanks for a great week to Peter Godbold, our IT professional, to John Fox, our chief engineer, and more. To Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org, the man who makes all the packets pass and all the streams stream. He does everything he does as a separate endeavor from the horn and has to raise his own funds. Please remember that. Thanks to horn intern Junior Grade Ferg, who answered your phone calls some this week. He'll probably do that some more next week. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. They sponsor these programs, and they spend all their time upstream, upwind, fighting like the dickens for all of us who are downstream and downwind. And they never cease. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! It's Friday, pulled through the end of the week. Awfully glad to have you along to close the week out, the beginning of my weekend, such as it is. 3 hours to close out the week with great conversation. I hope you will make yourself part of it and join in. It's all very free form. It's very much casual and downright neighborly. It is Front Porch Friday. Come on up on the porch. Occupy one of the rocking chairs. Get a swig from the jug in the corner if you want. Because Fridays are for relaxing. And that's what I'm hoping we're going to do. I guess a word of explanation is in order for my absence last night. And trust me, it was not frivolous. It was not, it wasn't me playing hooky. Erring on the side of caution, I took Agnes to the hospital yesterday. Her doctor thought that she should get there. And what he was afraid of wasn't the case, we hope, still. Looks like Agnes is giving birth to a bouncing baby ulcer. Them suckers hurt. We went over to the local ER, and they ran a CT scan on her. And it was read by some dude in, you know, some dude in India, getting paid, you know, $3.35 an hour, some radiologist over there who... And, you know, that's all well and good. It's just that I'm a little leery now because it took them three tries to realize something as obvious as the fact that my innards are backwards. You know, same place, same outfit, same contract. So, you know, we're crossing our fingers and hoping they got it right on Agnes. But that's where we were. But she appears to be okay. She doesn't feel real good. She hurts. And they say that that's the case with ulcers. Ulcers hurt. So my apologies for missing last night, but that was the reason for it. You know, and every time we have one of these little adventures with the American for-profit medical system, I come back sort of scratching my head. And I don't know how anybody who has any power within government could spend more than a couple of hours in an emergency room, be it rural or urban, and walk away thinking that the system's okay, that this all works, this is just fine. You know, you'd like for the punkin-faced John Boner to just sit for a weekend out in the waiting area of a little rural...